All right. This is Jeremy from Indiana. Hello, Jim and Alice. Hopefully this finds Alice in good spirits and great health, at least for now. My question for Jim pertains to the Pillman has a gun angle. The boys at the New Gen podcast, okay, recently covered this one in their timeline.
Did we just plug somebody?
Yeah, that was unintentional. I just read it. And
that's all right. I don't know who they are.
Yeah, me either.
Hello, and welcome to episode 51 of the New Generation Project podcast, where enough is enough and it's time for a change. Today, courtesy of WWEDVD.co.uk, we take a look at the brand new DVD and Blu-ray release, Owen, Heart of Gold. My name is Stuart Brooks, and I'm joined today by our very own King of Hearts, Paul Scrivens.
Hello.
And Blackheart, Adam Wykes.
Oh, hello.
King of Hearts, I'll take that. Hopefully I'm the King of Mrs. Scrivens' Heart.
What if you weren't?
Well, I've grounds for divorce, I think.
How are you both doing?
All right, thanks. Yourself?
Yeah, not too bad. Not too bad. Been up to much?
No. You?
Trying to work out how I can equally divide working like 50 hours a week, sleeping and paying about 75 hours a week of Fallout 4. The balance isn't great.
I've been trying to split my time between working and avoiding any hideous spoilers from him playing Fallout 4.
Is it the sort of thing you get spoilers for? Isn't it just a game?
It has a storyline, yeah.
It has a storyline.
It has a plot.
I'm not really big on gaming, you may have guessed. If
I was to compare it to something that I think you'll know in terms of, like, storyline and plot, I would probably compare it to a film called The Road.
You mean it goes absolutely nowhere?
Well, there's more Gatling lasers in Fallout 4.
Yeah.
Adam, how are you?
A bit tired, but apart from that, not too bad.
That's always your answer, no matter what time of day we record. What's wrong with you?
Always tired. Just generally working in the Quango. Takes it out of you.
Quango?
He works for Quang.
Quang is the boss of the Quango.
I'd like to think so. Maybe you should go doctors about your sleepiness.
Maybe I've not been sleeping very well.
Well, that's probably why you're tired all the time.
Yeah, that would account for it.
I think we've got to the root of the problem.
I think I need to improve my sleep hygiene.
What?
Well, no, this
have
is
a wash before you go to bed.
That's what I thought, you know. Sleep hygiene, surely that's just like making sure your sheets are clean and stuff. But no, apparently sleep hygiene is improving your conditions of sleeping.
Such as,
you know, no caffeinated beverages after a certain amount, not going to bed too hungry or too full, making sure that you don't spend too much time, like for a couple of hours before you go to sleep, on computer devices, stuff like that, things that will basically help your sleep.
But I do the opposite of all those things and I sleep fine.
The caffeine thing just makes sense.
Yes.
But generally, like, I'll play Fallout 4 until my eyes stop working and then go to sleep.
Well, apparently TVs...
You wake up blind as well.
Yes.
Apparently TVs are a bit different in terms of their light output.
So you're talking like iPads and mobile phones?
Yes,
and...
yeah, that type of thing.
So have you improved your sleep hygiene? Have you cleaned your sheets? They probably could do with a good clean.
My sheets are clean.
But look like some kind of dirty protest to me.
Covered in chocolate mousse.
Yeah. We are recording this in Adam's bed.
It's a bit of a squeeze.
Yeah, maybe I just need to improve my sleeping conditions and then maybe I won't be so sleepy all the time.
Any of you out there that are some sort of sleep doctor, feel free to suggest things to improve Adam's sleep so that the next time we record and I say, Adam, how are you? You will say...
Bright alert, full of energy.
Wide awake.
Yeah. Yeah, so actually, any really good tips on improving your sleep, that would be most appreciated.
Don't have kids is one, I hear.
Yeah, I've managed that one.
You, not so much.
No.
How does baby Scrivens sleep? Pretty well?
Usually, but the other night, not so much. Just said, no sleep, daddy.
Didn't want to go.
I misquoted him. No need sleep, daddy.
No need sleep.
Yeah, when he's saying that's at like 2 a.m, I don't think he's really telling the truth. Daddy needs sleep.
What was his response to that?
No need sleep, daddy.
So he was telling you that you didn't need any sleep.
No, I think he was saying he didn't need any sleep, but
by proxy, you didn't either.
Yeah, but basically, just pretty much had to get up.
I sleep fine. I just don't like getting out of bed in the
morning. Sounds like I sleep better than that.
Yeah, maybe that'll improve your sleep, knowing that his is worse.
Maybe.
Before we do anything at all today, we need to address the fact that there's a large white box sat on the table in front of us.
What's it full of?
Well, our friends over at Wrestle Crates UK have sent us one of their Wrestle Crates. So let's open it and have a look what's inside.
Oh, it's like Christmas.
But a month early.
Well, let's just describe this. I'll commentate on the event. So Stuart's now sat with the Wrestle Crate on his lap, still boxed, looking pretty pristine, really. He's got a green cushion there as well. He's opening the lid, doing it smooth action. I can't see what's inside, but I think he can. He's not giving anything away. Well, this really is exciting. So, go on, what's inside? What's inside? He's teasing us. Oh, there's a picture of Stone Cold.
From the chap that does the artwork for Calling Spots. It's got a face on as well, which is excellent.
Oh, that's very nice. It's kind of a very... Is it lenticular?
No, it's not lenticular.
It's just very...
just ticular.
Very shiny.
Adam likes just showing off that he knows what the word lenticular means.
He's a big fan of things that are lenticular or steelbooks.
I do like Blu-ray steelbooks, yes.
Ooh.
Is that a signed picture of Mr. Kennedy?
Or Mr. Anderson, as he is these days. Ooh. Got that, yeah. Ooh. Good stuff. Yeah,
very nice.
Who's your favourite Hardy brother?
Fool.
Jeff.
Well, you might be... Well, there's Matt.
Oh, there is Matt. Hello, Matt.
It's an autographed picture of Matt Hardy, and we've got a little Matt Hardy social media website card as well.
Okay.
So that's that. We've got a DVD
of
Vertigo Pro Wrestling.
Okay.
Which is a UK group, I gather. Johnny Storm's on it.
Okay, yeah.
I've heard of him. And Dave Mastiff's on it. I quite like him.
Yeah.
You've seen him as well. So that's quite cool. I do need to check out more British wrestling that isn't the stuff I know, so that's pretty good.
Yeah.
Ooh, we've got a PCW DVD.
Oh, and that's got Mr. Anderson on it.
That has got Mr. Anderson. And my favourite, Davey Richards, is there as well.
Are they against each other?
No, I don't think so. No, and Will Ospreay's on there as well, so that's pretty cool. Yeah, but again, I know I definitely need to check some of this stuff out, so that's pretty cool.
So it's kind of widening your wrestling palette?
My wrestling spectrum, yes. We've got a little PCW badge as well. Okay. I like badges.
Mm, yeah.
And badgers. We've got...
Oh, it's a pop vinyl of Daniel Bryan. Mm, how very exciting.
It also says it's an exclusive Underground Toys pop vinyl of Daniel Bryan.
What does that bit mean?
I think it's like a variant one, so not like a normal one that you can get in the shops.
So
like a
rarer?
A special rarer one, which is pretty cool. On the back, you can also get Undertaker, Triple H, Macho Man, Randy Savage, Hulk Hogan and AJ Lee.
Is it the same Macho Man that you've already got?
Yes.
Excellent.
Okay.
So our pop vinyl collection, mine and Adam's combined, now comprises of Daniel Bryan, Randy Savage, Rocket Raccoon and Thanos.
Yeah, all good stuff.
Yeah, pretty good.
Yeah.
And finally... We've got a T-shirt.
Let's have a look.
That says...
Bank on it.
It's a Sasha Banks T-shirt.
Oh, is that what it is? Oh, yeah. That's good.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
Excellent.
Yeah. Well, that is rather splendid. Because I bought you a crate thing for your birthday, and it wasn't very good.
Yeah, but you got me a Star Wars one, didn't you?
Yeah, but I improved it with things.
Which bits were your additions to it, just out of interest?
My additions were the game, the pop vinyl, and the Lego TIE Fighter thingy, or Millennium Falcon, whatever it was.
Ah, so you provided the better
items. The better items. The best thing that came out of the actual crate itself was the lunchbox, which I'm glad you used.
Yeah, the lunchbox is pretty cool.
So if you like the sound of what we found inside the first Wrestle Crate, shipped and sorted in the UK, I've got some good news for you.
Really?
There's still time to sign up for the December crate, and if you want to do so, head on over to wrestlecrate.co.uk or .com and enter the promotional code NEWGENPODCAST for 10% off.
We've got a discount code.
Yes.
That's like the best thing ever.
You are unfeasibly happy about that.
That's really good. And if you enter the code, yes, Paul Scrivens, that doesn't really do anything.
No, in fact, it probably negates the part of the code that works.
but try it anyway. Something might happen.
So 10% off both the standard and ultimate crate. You have until midnight on December the 12th to sign up.
That's cool.
That's pretty good, isn't it? Thanks to...
Yeah, thank you very much.
Well, thanks to us, really, in some ways, for giving people a discount code.
Well, it's not really them for doing it.
Yeah, thanks to WrestleCrate. So thank you very much, guys.
Ordering from the UK site saves you up to £8.75 on delivery, because they did launch this in the States a while back, and I did think about ordering one, but then the shipping was quite a lot over here. But obviously the chaps behind Calling Spots have bought the concept over here. So that's another sign of quality as well, really. I would stand by what they put out and what they're involved with. So definite high recommendations. I will look forward to wearing that Sasha Banks t-shirt.
Is that in your size?
Yeah, I may have ordered it in my size, yes.
Oh, we're the same size, aren't we?
Yeah, about.
We could share it.
Adam could wear it as a nightshirt during his sleep deprivation.
We're not splitting a t-shirt like three ways, like a share system.
I think we should.
In summary, New Gen Podcast, WrestleCrate.co.uk, 10% off, December the 12th is your deadline.
And if you want help in working out that 10%, at WrestleMaths.
Normally at this stage of the show, we'd get into one of our audience suggestions, but as we've still got a few questions left over and we committed to basically answering everything, we'll deal with some of those before we get into the main part of the show. Are you
Let's
ready?
Let's do that, yeah.
Go on then.
So I'm going to read them all out and then you guys can give me some answers.
Go for it.
Dominic Butcher. Firstly, are you guys MMA fans? What's the chance of you reviewing a UFC or Pride show?
I've seen little bits of MMA before, and I've got to be honest, the bits that I've seen haven't really thrilled me.
Okay.
So I wouldn't particularly say I'm a fan. If there was somebody like, I would be interested in, say, watching CM Punk
fight.
If he did some, you know, I never really caught any of Lesnar's stuff, little bits on the internet, but, you know, I'd perhaps watch little bits, but more out of an interest for the wrestling personalities rather than the MMA itself.
Yeah, I've not seen a great deal of it. How accessible is it over here for us?
Pretty accessible.
Well, I've just obviously never bothered.
Maybe on one of these long, lonely nights, you could watch some MMA.
I don't know. It always looked a bit too much like on the serious line.
Right.
I mean, almost like boxing.
Yeah.
So you could get quite built up for a match, but it could be over in 30 seconds flat.
No, not really. Massive MMA fan. I'll sort of say the same as Paul in that, like, when Lesnar was doing it, I would watch what he was doing. And should CM Punk ever actually have a fight, I would probably watch that. You know, you hear enough about the Ronda Rouseys and the Conor McGregors of the world to kind of have an idea of who they are, but we could probably review one, but we probably wouldn't have any idea what we were talking about.
Yeah, there's no one that comes out with a bull's head.
Lastly, are there any wrestling matches that smarks gush over, give 5 stars, etc., that you've thought were overrated? My personal vote would go to Joe versus Kobashi in ROH. Conversely, are there any matches that the internet had been lukewarm to that you have liked?
I think everybody has a slightly different taste of what they want for a match.
What's that one that you're always talking about that's really boring? Some sort of street fight?
It's Three Stages of Hell, Triple H versus Austin.
That's the one. Yeah, everyone seems to think they're good, but...
I really hate
it. Yeah, because it goes on
too
forever.
Long, too boring. I really liked Bayley versus Eva Marie this week on NXT. I don't know what the general... I haven't really read what the general consensus on that is, but I thought it was actually really good.
Is that the one where someone was reading a book?
In the front row, yeah.
I can't think of any others particularly that are very well regarded that I've sat there and thought, don't really get that.
Well, the Undertaker Triple H WrestleMania matches, I'm kind of not a big fan of, but I don't know if that's an internet thing or, like, that was a very WWE design. This is the match of the year. You will love this. And they kind of didn't really hold a candle to the Shawn Michaels matches for me.
I wasn't really a big fan of the Punk Jericho Mania match.
I thought that was okay.
But I just didn't like the fact that it was... It felt very different to me, as in there was loads of crystal clear dialogue by both kind of competitors throughout it. Just felt a bit strange, almost like it was a bit more of a pantomime sort of show around it. I don't know, it just didn't flow as much as a wrestling match as I thought it should have.
That's reminded me of Cena, Brock Lesnar.
Extreme Rules.
I don't think it was that one. Which was the one with loads of suplexes?
SummerSlam 2014.
Yeah, I didn't enjoy that as much because everybody had, like, really built that up for me. As you know, this will blow your mind. This will be amazing. And I didn't particularly enjoy it. It's one of those things that I think I said at the time. It's a spectacle.
Yeah.
And it's of interest, but I didn't think it was a great match.
Whereas conversely, Adam loved it.
Yeah. It just depends what you like in wrestling. Yeah. It's what he liked. I wasn't so hot on it.
I thought it was dead good.
Aaron Campos. Paul, have you mastered your DG word vocabulary? Let's find out.
DG?
DG.
What does that mean?
Prodigy.
Oh, right, I see. So basically I've got something to read. I've practiced some of the words, but I haven't mastered any of them. As I crossed a bridge, I met a prodigy who acknowledged a badgering Taka Michinoko, who became a judge and a mathematician whilst he was bludgeoned with too much pie before taxing budgets. The rouge, being cagey, knowing trigonometry worked for me, yet hooked on phonics, edged over him begrudgingly with a fledgling tragedy. I did my best.
Almost. Almost.
And lots that was of really hard words.
Good effort.
Yeah, I'm actually impressed with that.
Tragedy.
Nice try, Aaron Campos.
Tragedy. How do you say it again?
Tragedy.
That wasn't right.
Yeah. Brad Jones, what is your earliest wrestling memory?
I think we might have covered this before. My earliest wrestling memory is definitely when I went round for one of my primary school friends' birthday parties, and in his collection of toys, he definitely had a Hulk Hogan figure, a Jake Roberts figure, and a Million Dollar Man figure.
Right.
And I was like, what are these? And he kind of explained what wrestling was.
Why is this man in his pants? Why does it have a dollar sign on it?
Why's he got a snake? What's that all about? Yeah, that's my earliest memory of what wrestling was. So it wasn't actually seeing wrestling, it was finding out about the characters through the figures.
So can you remember the first match or event or show you saw?
As far as the first things that I saw, I'm not overly sure. There's a whole mishmash of things that I definitely had, which I think I mentioned, like Survivor Series 89.
Yeah.
And the Royal Rumble 1990, and like a few bits and bobs like that. I probably saw other bits on videotape around this friend's house, but yeah. I couldn't tell you what they were because they were probably taped off Sky.
I think when I've talked about it before, I may have inadvertently missed off a small detail. When I was very young...
Your dad was Big Daddy. Adam always just spit his beer everywhere.
No.
Paul's actual name is Crabtree.
Paul Crabtree.
When I was young, so much younger than today...
You never needed wrestling in any way.
No, I lived next door to a kid that was about a year older than me, and then I moved basically around the corner, effectively about 100 yards. I can't have been very old at the time, but he showed me a bit of a video which I think would probably have involved the Ultimate Warrior Hulk Hogan,
right.
Possibly their Mania match.
Okay.
What year was that?
1990.
So that put me, slightly older than I thought, so maybe 8. But yeah, so I saw a bit of that, and then that interested me. And then I saw a little bit on my granddad's Sky involving Papa Shango, and it scared me, so I switched off.
For 8 years.
Yes.
WrestleMania 8 is mine. There definitely must have been something before it in terms of a memory to get me to want to watch it. But again, I've probably gone into it before, but we got Sky like the day before my 10th birthday. And yeah, the first things we watched were The Simpsons, and WrestleMania 8 was on.
Was it free?
Yes, yeah. It was years before it was pay-per-view. Harry Green, what are your favourite wrestling moves / what do you always mark out over when you see, no matter what?
Steiner screwdriver.
I marked out over one of the moves that I saw when I was watching a match that I saw last night, which I'll come to later in the show, I guess.
Okay. I've got rolling prawn hold.
Yeah, you do love it.
Northern Light suplex.
Yeah, I mean, I do like a good choke. I'm not just any choke, it has to be a good one.
Name some of your favourites.
I think some of the choke slams that the Big Show has done on the shows that we've seen recently in our timeline have been very good.
Did you ever check out that one he does on Benoit at Clash of the Champions?
No.
The best choke slam ever.
Yeah. Okay.
Whose highs were high and whose lows were lower creatively? WCW or WWE?
That is a tough one. Like, I guess it depends on what your parameters are. Are you talking wrestling, or are you talking entertainment?
I guess creatively implies entertainment.
Taste, does that come into it?
Yes.
WWE did some pretty dodgy stuff taste-wise, didn't they? So, and they have had some good highs. I'd probably say WWE/F.
I'd probably say WCW. I think creatively, maybe the turn of Hogan and that sort of stuff is a massive high, and having a character called The Final Solution is a massive low.
Plus, you know, you've never sat down and watched like 1999 to 2001 WCW, have you?
No.
Mm.
Is that truly upsetting?
Creatively quite low. Right. Considering what they go through in 96 and 97, yeah, it can be argued that maybe the drop-off is steeper and quicker, perhaps. Mm, okay. The WWE have had some fairly creative highs. I mean, again, we'll get into it later today, but just rewatching some of that Brett versus Owen, brother versus brother stuff, like the storytelling in that is just so good.
Mm.
And going further back to kind of stuff like Hogan versus Savage, the storytelling there and the creativity there, you know, that stuff is fantastic. And today they've got Sheamus as champion, so it's a slower decline, but maybe it will reach the pits of WCW. Don't know. They did have a segment where Mark Henry was having a dream about JBL and El Torito. So
what? On the subject of Sheamus, did they do a focus group for this to find out who was actually wanting Sheamus to be champion?
Sheamus as champion, I mean, is that really a thing?
Yes. It actually happened. I thought it was a joke, but it actually happened.
Why?
I don't know. It's certainly not what the audience want, is it? Or is it?
Audience challenge for the next episode. Why is Sheamus champion?
And Harry Green's final question is, and what do you think about WrestleMania 19? For me, it's the most star-studded with some of the best wrestling in history. I think it is unfairly overshadowed by WrestleMania 17.
So the Lesnar angle finale.
Yes, Stone Cold, The Rock, Michaels, Jericho, Triple H, Booker T.
Right, now, my memory's a little sketchy on most of this, as you might imagine.
I've only really seen the main event.
But yeah, the Lesnar angle match is one of my personal favourites, I think.
Is it mainly for the Shooting Stars Press that doesn't quite go right?
There's a lot of things that go into that match, especially the idea that Angle's neck is completely screwed, isn't it?
Yeah.
Mm.
And he's in desperate need of surgery. And so with that knowledge in mind, all of Lesnar's moves look extra devastating. I think that match is dead good. And then, yeah, obviously the bungled Shooting Star, which has got that moment where you think, oh, shit, he's dead.
Yeah.
And then the next moment where he just gets up and F5s.
I like that, like, he's clearly, like, out of his mind.
Yeah.
Concussed and whatever.
It is
but
his first instinct. Guts reaction. I don't know where I am. I've stood up. Well, F5, the nearest person.
Worked out all right, really.
Yeah, yeah. It's brilliant.
I think my overriding memory of that is the bravery of Angle to let Lesnar carry on knowing that he must be out of it.
Yeah.
Was quite something. That's trust.
Well, I wonder what you do in that situation. It's like it's the main event of the biggest show of the year. You've got, what, 60-odd thousand people in front of you. You can't just go, hang on, they stopped, everyone go home.
Well, you've got to wonder, what would they do these days with everything being a lot tighter?
Yeah.
Health and say, would they try and just do a
Divas match?
A quick, well some kind of
makeup main event, yeah.
It's a very good point, actually, is that Angle's mindset, so you think about Lesnar being, you know, he's concussed, so what's he do? But Angle, who could possibly end up in a wheelchair if he takes the wrong move, then willingly takes a really devastating high-impact manoeuvre off the muscliest person on the show who's just been concussed.
Yeah.
That is ballsy, because he could have said no.
But as for the show itself, it's a pretty damn good show. Michael's Jericho is really good.
It's been so long since I've seen it that I'd have to rewatch it again.
It was kind of sort of a weird turning point, I think, that was the last sort of Mania before the era of your Cena's, Orton's, Batista's kind of came in. So you kind of had the last remnants of the big stars of the Attitude Era, kind of some of the WCW guys before sort of a new generation of people started to come through. So, yeah, I like that as a show. I'd say I prefer it probably to WrestleMania 20. I'd probably have to watch 17 and 19 back-to-back to make a choice on which one was better.
Mm.
Probably 17, if I'm honest. Jamie Taylor, what is the best British wrestling show you have all been to?
I've only been to them two with you. I think the International Incident and that Noah one that we went to. I seem to remember
International Showdown, you mean? International Incident was
We didn't go to that.
Sadly.
Yeah. That I think I enjoyed the International Showdown more than
Noah.
The Noah one. Yeah. I don't know why. Maybe it's just because it was like the first show that I've been to and it was so much bigger than I actually envisaged that it was going to be.
Yeah.
And there were lots of these guys wrestling and you had to tell me like who they were, but it was dead impressive. I seem to remember like Chris Sabin being quite impressive. There was lots of really cool stuff happening on it.
See, the other good thing there is Jamie's asking for British wrestling and unfortunately the show you're mentioning is mostly American
wrestlers. It's full of Americans, but at the time, it was a show in Britain that I really enjoyed. And I guess the Noah one that we went to was full of Japanese wrestlers and American wrestlers.
Pretty much.
I've not actually seen a British wrestling show.
But we're going to, aren't we?
Yes, we are.
We're going to go check out Southside in December.
Indeed. So that will be my first British show.
Yeah. So if anyone's at their show on December the 27th, come say Merry Christmas or something. Pick any one of the York Hall shows. They're all damn good. Again, I'd probably need to watch some of those. Maybe Summer Sizzler last year, because that had like Nakamura, Finn Balor, Kevin Steen, those kind of guys on it. That was really good. So maybe that one. And he asks, would you ever cover a British wrestling company timeline? Probably not, because we'll probably only ever cover this timeline. Jason Robert, if you were the Shield, who is Reigns, Ambrose and Rollins, respectively? Well, I think Adam worked this one out.
I did, because I thought that the architect of the Shield, or the architect of the podcast, is definitely Stuart, is the brains behind the operation.
He does lots of very accurate drawings.
The lunatic fringe is definitely Scrivens,
yeah,
because he's off the wall, and then that just leaves me with Reigns. Good old wank pheasant.
And you're definitely a wank pheasant here. Yeah.
I'd love to know where that phrase really came from.
It must be a British person, right?
Yeah, but I believe they were British.
Was it like, well done?
I almost feel sorry for Rollins, because obviously Reigns had wank pheasant and Ambrose had titty master, but Rollins never had a cool, weird sign.
He's never had an amusing crowd sign that mocks him.
Yeah. Although I'm not sure if titty master's actually mocking.
Yeah, plus...
Or is it complimentary?
If you're using that analogy, is Paul really the titty master?
No.
Jack Benedetti. Was the Montreal Screwjob actually just a giant work? Yeah, probably.
Well,
I don't know.
You know more about that than I do, but I look forward to finding out more
in
next
approximately
year.
October time.
Is that when it'll be?
Yeah, I would imagine that's about when we'd reach it, sort of timeline-wise.
Excellent.
TJ Moody, why don't you ever read my suggestions?
Hello, TJ Moody.
Until you get like a more showbiz name. Because that's really how we do the suggestions. So Grim McSlam gets read every time.
Quizmaster Flash, Richard Query.
Richard Query.
Who's your other one you really like, Adam?
Pablo Melons.
Yeah, that was it.
I don't know. I mean, I can't...
Well, you're the one who picks all the suggestions, so you tell TJ Moody why you don't ever read the suggestions.
I never pick the suggestions. What happens is me and Adam get a list from Stuart.
That you fail to read before we start recording and then struggle with the words.
Yeah. It was really, really interesting, though, because last time we did that, Adam really did take my role as not being able to read, because normally I just can't read anything.
Yeah, I was having a bit of an off day last time.
Yeah,
you were tired.
I was really tired last time.
You really scrivensed it up.
Is that the verb now?
Yeah, just scrivens it up.
Well, there we go, TJ Moody. We've had a big discussion based off your suggestion.
Well, question.
Question, suggestion.
Yeah.
We've read your question. That's something. Corey Burns, if you could host a podcast about any other topic, what would you choose?
BBC Breakfast News.
The BBC Breakfast News, the podcast.
That would be brilliant.
I do it daily and criticise it massively.
We talk about Carol's leopard print top and leather skirt.
What is Carol wearing? And what is the BBC thinking?
And why is Steph marching around a town full of small people? That happened the other day.
Yeah, I know. You know when we talked about this becoming a bit niche?
Yeah. I imagine if you actually started a podcast called the BBC Breakfast News podcast, you'd probably get tons of downloads.
Imagine you might be sued by the BBC.
Steph McGovern might follow you.
Well, wow.
We could do one on Countdown.
How?
Just like review all the Countdown games. Like, I got that as well. I got a 7 in that round.
I'm not sure it'd really be that exciting.
Plus, it'd turn Paul into the pervert of the podcast over Rachel Riley.
Possibly. She does some bad maths occasionally.
Does that put you off her?
Do you reckon you'd make a better replacement?
It makes me... No, I wouldn't want to replace her.
You could be in Dictionary Corner.
I'd quite like to be in Dictionary Corner. I do enjoy learning lots of new words from Susie Dent.
I thought you were going to say, I enjoy Susie Dent, then.
I don't enjoy Susie. I follow her.
Really?
Yeah, I follow
her. Does she tweet some good stuff?
She tweets new words occasionally.
Splendid. I picked Babylon 5. I quite like that. I'd quite like to talk about that.
I guess, really, if I was actually doing it genuinely, probably cricket is anything I really know about.
Andrew Scythe, if Vince McMahon keeps a caged monster in the basement of Titan Towers, who and what is it? Bonus points for non-Mantar answers. There's a really obvious answer here. I've got it down. It's Brock Lesnar.
Well, yeah.
It's probably Demon Kane.
Oh, is it Yankum?
Dean Malenko?
Dean Malenko is the monster in the basement.
Why not?
Andrew McGrillan, how do you think WWE could legitimately sell out this year's WrestleMania?
Give away some tickets.
Yeah, my answer is give away 20,000 tickets and then invent stim packs and apply them to half of the roster.
or rebrand it as a reinvented Attitude Era, because people always love that.
Yes, they probably won't be doing that.
They could call it the new Attitude Era and then just have it with a really good attitude where everybody's like exemplary people.
Yeah, really hoodwink people into
yeah.
it.
Yeah,
they could dupe people yeah. into going.
I came for tits and blood and I've just had niceties.
Do like a real kind of raucous teaser trailer and then be basically the whole show being the right to censor.
Well, that's the thing, isn't it? Now, like, if you think about it long term, right to censor won.
Yeah.
Yeah, they censored the whole of the Attitude Era.
But maybe what it should be now is it should be the opposite way around. It should be
right to nudity.
Well, not right to nudity, but it should be like the majority of the show being kind of the good people with a few naughty people trying to.
Naughty people?
Paul Scriven's face versus heel booking.
some naughty people trying to get one over on them and trying to swell their ranks.
Joel Yentis, can I have my Terry Funk book back, please? Also, can I borrow Hardcore Holly's book, please?
I don't have them. I've got Hardcore Holly's book, but it's only digitally.
I'll take that specifically to you.
Yeah, it might be. Yeah, his Terry Funk book's in my kitchen at work.
What?
Well, I sit and read it sometimes on lunch.
You've got a kitchen at work?
Yeah. Most places have a kitchen, don't they?
Yeah, I guess so.
Yes, you can borrow Hardcore Holly's book, but come and get it. Ashley James Clements, with Adam mentioning in the last New Generation game that Kelly is the default diva, my challenge for him is to take attributes from past and present female wrestlers to create the total diva. But you can only use one attribute from each wrestler, being physical or skill, so he can't just say Sonny from 1996.
All right, then. Well, I did have a bit of a think about this one.
It's the one thing.
We'll start from the... Well, we'll start from the bottom up, but it's not actually from the bottom.
From the feet?
From the feet up.
Okay.
Feet attached to legs. I go for Stacey Keebler's legs.
Well, that's an obvious one.
Because you
one.
Need some long legs. Then I'd swell it out a bit with Naomi's butt going on here.
Can I leave the show? Is it too late?
And then I thought about, you know, maybe having Beth Phoenix's broad torso. But I decided to refine it into Maria's.
And Maria's?
That includes the arms as well.
But hang on, because
I couldn't think of any specific arms of divas that I liked.
But the thing is, right, I'm sure. I mean, I don't know this for certain, but I've got a fairly good guess that you're going to go from torso to higher chest area, and then this woman is going to have somebody's like stomach, somebody else's upper chest parts, and then back to the torso person's arms. Are you crazy?
Upper chest part.
Tits.
Okay, thank you. Well, no, they just fit on the front, don't they? That's
on.
Well, these ones do. So I chose Sunnies for it, you know, because they're one of the most natural looking jobs that the WWE has ever done.
Adam, the anatomy expert.
Yeah. And the one thing that I really couldn't decide on was face.
Doesn't matter, does it?
So I'd probably just have to leave it at Kelly's.
Okay.
You know, Eva Marie's hair, Sasha Banks' personality, Bull Nakano's wrestling ability, and Lillian Garcia's amazing ability to defy time.
Well, you've not had any mention of Trish or Lita.
Or Sable. I know, weird, huh? Couldn't think of a voice either. Just not Deborah's, not Sable's, not China's.
Nicole Bass.
I never heard her speak, but I imagine it sounded something like Ron Simmons.
You can't say that. Can we edit this whole thing?
Hey, the question was asked, and I just answered it honestly.
But, like, let's try and make us not sound like really people. Bad people.
It's not us, it's just him.
How is that bad?
You could have said, you know what? Beauty's in the eye of the beholder. All of these women have fantastic skills. They're all lovely people, and I would like to treat them chivalrously, all of them.
And thus the birth of the new attitude era was born.
But no.
Let's try this one. Theodore Xenophontos.
See, that's the sort of name you need.
Would you ever consider reviewing WrestleMania X7 in the future?
Oh, well, you're the architect, would we?
I don't know, maybe.
Fair enough. I'd quite like to do it because it is such a stellar show.
I wouldn't be against it.
It's got the gimmick Battle Royal on it, and we'd recognise lots of people in that.
That would be a good reason to do it.
Yeah.
That, yeah.
The dumpster drosy is in it.
Wow.
The and the goon.
And the gobbledygooker.
Anyone else?
Sergeant Slaughter, the Iron Sheik.
The Iron Sheik. I can't remember. Doink. There's loads of people in it that we'd know. Hmm. Maybe. Paul Adam Brooks. What indie star would you like to see in NXT?
Indie star would like to see? Probably Jack Sabre Jr.
Is Paul Adam Brooks just an amalgamation of our names?
I think he might
that's
be.
Weird. I hadn't noticed that.
Had you not? I think that's perhaps a deliberate thing.
No.
Because that can't be somebody's name.
It is feasible that that is somebody's name.
If it is, it's a remarkable coincidence.
Adam? And he's a fan of the show.
Even better.
Yeah, Jack Sabre Jr. Or is it Zach? Is it Zach?
It's Zach,
Zach,
yeah.
Yeah, okay.
I wasn't bothering to correct you anymore.
Yeah.
Indie wrestlers to move to NXT?
Yes.
In all fairness, I'd quite like to see Chris Hero go back there and actually be given a good push this time.
I've got Ricochet.
Ricochet.
Ricochet. Easily my favourite indie guy to watch. I can't understand why they've passed on him.
Who's my favourite?
Who's your favourite?
Who's your favourite?
Cage.
Brian Cage.
Cage needs to go there. He'd get along fabulously.
When they say indies, I mean, you wouldn't count the Lucha Underground guys.
Yeah,
and
you
that.
Can count them.
What about Pentagon? Yeah. Junior, something like that.
But they'd probably give him a different shape.
Dodecahedron Junior.
Triangle Junior. Square.
Scalene Triangle Junior. It's all different.
El Hijo del Circle.
Yeah.
Son of the Circle.
Yeah.
That kind of works.
That's quite good, yeah.
Yeah, see? Who is your guilty pleasure wrestler?
Wagner.
What?
Guilty pleasure.
What?
You don't watch the X Factor, do you?
No.
No.
I watched X Factor when they were on wrestling.
No, because like what would happen a few years ago, this is where kind of, for me, that guilty pleasure term really strikes a chord, is Cheryl Cole, where there'd be a terrible act on the British X Factor I watch. Somebody like Jedward, if people know who they are, reprehensibly bad singers who somehow make it unfeasibly far in a show. And every week, in order to try and keep them in the show for longer and to get more kind of attention, it's always one of the judges would go, or, you know what? No, that's not the right accent, is it?
That was not a million miles away from Geordie, if that's not, what you're trying.
Quite annoying. You know what? Like, you're not the best singer in the competition, but you're my guilty pleasure.
Borderline Scott.
It was actually really entertaining. That's my Cheryl Cole impression. It's uncanny. It's just as good as many of my others.
So who's your guilty pleasure wrestler?
Come back to me.
Right to censor. Loads of people hated them. I really liked them.
Papa Shango, obviously.
Oh, yeah, you've got loads.
Yeah.
Reel off your guilty pleasures.
Kamala, I love Kamala matches. He pins people the wrong way up.
You love Max Moon.
I love Max Moon. I love Battle Cat.
We all love Mantar.
I legitimately love Battle Cat.
Guilty pleasure.
You liked Bastian Booger.
It was funny. Who don't people like?
Eva Marie.
No, they kind of like from our era.
Quang.
I didn't like him.
Savio Vega.
No, I didn't like him. There must be people that have. There are people that I've enjoyed that other people haven't so much.
The IRS.
No. No, maybe don't have one.
You don't have one. Splendid.
Good stuff, Scrivens.
I really can't. Just tell me some people. I'll tell you if I
just told you loads.
Not loads, about three.
Brutus Beefcake.
No, I hate him.
Johnny B. Bad.
Yeah, I like Johnny B. Bad.
I don't know if he's a guilty pleasure, actually. He's quite good.
The Ultimate Solution.
Very guilty pleasure.
extra guilty pleasure.
Who have we seen in WCW?
Giant Gonzalez.
Jim Duggan.
You like Jim Duggan?
No, I don't.
Oh.
I just thought I'd get Adam.
Well, that sees us through some more questions, so we'll try and finish them all off next time, and hopefully if we haven't got to yours, we'll stick that into the start of whatever the next episode is.
The crowd chanting, Owen, Owen, Owen. They love this young man.
I knew he was going to be good. They had no doubt in my mind. I had no idea he was going to be that good.
It was just great to be around him at all times.
I can't think of anybody that didn't like Owen. That's the kind of guy he was.
Owen was an extremely fun-loving person.
Every time I was around Owen, I mean, you couldn't stop smiling. He would always be doing something.
This is a young man destined for superstardom.
I'll never forget the first time I saw Owen Hart. And I saw Owen Hart do all of these things that I'd never seen before.
His legacy is that here we are all these years later, still talking about Owen.
Never saw him, man. In a bad mood.
To me, Owen Hart always looked like he was enjoying himself. That was probably the most appealing thing about him.
He was amazing. He was amazing everywhere he went.
So, Owen, Heart of Gold, is the new DVD and Blu-ray set from WWE, DVD.co.uk.
It is.
Let's kick off by asking you guys, what are your memories, if any, of Owen prior to doing this podcast?
You mentioned this earlier to me, and I was having a good think. And I've got a funny suspicion that I've seen a Blue Blazer match
right
back, you know, literally probably in about 1990. Because I remember a Blue Mask luchador type looking character. Obviously, being a child, I wouldn't know what luchador was.
Plus, it probably wasn't Hulk Hogan.
Yeah, but I remember that, and it would have only been on a WWF show.
Yeah.
So I guess it must have been him. It's a very sketchy memory, but I guess that's it.
I knew very little of him before watching the show, other than Brett's brother and Tragic Death. It's all I knew.
You hadn't seen many of his matches or knew a lot about him?
I don't think I'd seen any of his matches, to be honest.
My early memories of Owen are High Energy Owen. So that's who he was when I started watching. He was Coco Beware's tag team partner, and he wore the big luminous pants.
Parachute pants.
Yeah, that kind of thing. And obviously I saw kind of his feud with Brett. And then when I got back into it in 99, he was one of the kind of few people that I still recognised.
Mm.
So him and Jeff Jarrett at the time when I started rewatching were a tag team, and I knew Owen Hart and Jeff Jarrett, whereas a lot of the other guys I wasn't too familiar with. So there was a little bit of a connection for me with Owen in terms of being a route back in of a face I recognised.
I remember having like a WWF sticker album with various people in it, and the Rocket Owen Hart was in that.
Right.
I can't remember what sort of year it was. It was after the Hart Foundation split up, but before Brett had like a proper decent singles run. I think that the Texas Tornado was in it.
Right.
At the time, and so I'm not really sure what year that was, but maybe
so it'd be early 92 perhaps.
Maybe something like that, yeah.
What about since doing the show?
One of the nice things, I think, is just having heard some of the stories about kind of just, it seems a real consensus about what a great guy he was. That's something that kind of sticks with me whenever I'm watching his matches.
Right.
His versatility, his characterization. It's a word I've used a lot when I've listened back to episodes. It's kind of, it feels like I've made this word up, but
unlike many others.
Yes.
This is a real one.
Yeah. Yeah, and the little details, he seems master at it.
Certainly up there in one of the most reliable people that we've seen on the podcast, I think. You know, can't think of any bad Owen Hart matches that we've looked at. Always puts in, you know, a good showing in whatever match he's in. So I think he's just become, you know, synonymous with solid to outstanding performances in wrestling matches.
Okay, so this is quite a difficult topic to kind of broach, but I don't know if either of you are aware of this. If I was to tell you that this has obviously been produced without the approval of Owen's widow and children, what would kind of your thoughts and feelings be on the set itself, the documentary based on that?
I knew a bit of this anyway, that his widow didn't ever really want anything to do with the wrestling company.
Yeah.
Again, so this is a set that I thought would never actually happen, because how could they do it without the consent of the family? I don't know the background behind it. Have they come to some kind of agreement with her, but she's just not in it? Or have they just gone ahead and done it using the footage that they've got without her? I really don't know.
The Wrestling Observer suggests that Martha Hart has filed a suit against the WWE for releasing this, considering it a blatant attempt to profit off of her husband's memory. There's been no rebuttal from the WWE in terms of donating the profits to charity rather than keeping any for themselves. She previously sued them in 2010 following the release of Heart and Soul, the Heart Family documentary and DVD set.
All right.
With a settlement reached out of court in April 2013 for an undisclosed amount.
So they've lost a court battle.
Well, no, they didn't get to court. They paid her before it got to court.
But essentially that is losing.
Yes.
They paid out on this, on something that was... that Owen was only loosely part of, or he was a composite part of it, shall we say.
Yeah.
And they still went ahead and released something that is solely about him.
Yes.
Is that a bit short-sighted on their part?
That's quite difficult to hear because, I mean, I know little bits of this, so I knew that relations hadn't been good in the past. My assumption was, although it clearly seems to be wrong now, is that from the fact that this DVD has been made, that... some kind of understanding had been reached between WWE and Owen's wife. And I'm a bit shocked to hear that it hasn't, to be honest.
So it's obviously got the approval of his brothers and sisters. So
yeah.
It's kind of where you consider the line falls in terms of consent. They've got consent from many family members, but not the ones perhaps people would consider key.
Yeah.
You know, do you feel one trumps the other or...
It's not a matter of which is, you know, more value, maybe, but it's a kind of, I guess it's kind of a respectful thing.
Mm.
It's that, you know, it was a husband and wife thing. She was the closest person to him. You'd expect to have that permission above all else.
Right.
Yeah, it's a difficult one because, I know that to some extent, hearing that's kind of,
took the wind out your sails.
Yeah, that's probably the best way of describing it. And it's very sad because I think there's different ways of looking at this because I feel this DVD, having watched it, is you know, making Owen look like the superstar stand-up guy that he was. And from that side of things, you know, it's been done in a nice way, but if it's still not got the backing and kind of permission of his wife... who, you know, it doesn't matter how long ago this was, this still doesn't get any easier to deal with. You know, I don't think grief, you know, you can talk about time being healed, but such a painful thing, such a painful loss.
Yeah.
You can understand her point of view. Very difficult, I think.
Yeah, I think it's going to be one of those things where people are going to be vehemently on one side or the other. So Tom Downey on Facebook says, I really don't think this should have ever been released. Owen's widow didn't want it to happen and none of the profits go to her or any kind of charity. It's a rather repugnant money-making exercise by the WWE and I'll never watch it.
Mm.
So that poses the question as well. Do WWE fans deserve the opportunity to remember Owen with this set? Because while I can completely understand her not wanting them to profiteer off of Owen's legacy, there is also then a sense that his legacy is there not to be enjoyed by people X amount of years later when he should really be appreciated.
Yeah.
It's difficult and, you know, because there's always the worry that when things happen like this and if the story doesn't get told... inaccuracies can creep into stories and I guess myths almost build up.
Yeah.
Rather than perhaps having a more accurate representation. Not to say that it's very difficult to separate. I think it's just a very tricky thing. It's a very tricky and delicate subject and I can actually sympathise with views from several perspectives.
Right.
So I can understand what Tom Downey says that, you know, and, you know, actually what he says makes a lot of sense. I can understand people would really want to
run
see
out
this,
and
would,
buy it.
Would be really interested in watching it. You know, as a guy that still has a lot of influence over kind of a lot of wrestlers, as we kind of saw from the documentary, he still has an impact today, and in many ways, still an important influence on the industry. So it's very, very difficult topic.
Yeah, I think if you were to hear that this was being produced, but the profits were being donated to you know, I think it's safe to say she wouldn't want to take their money from something like this, but say, you know, hypothetically, you know, the story is Owen was going to leave and become a firefighter, so they gave the money to a charity for firefighters.
Yeah.
Do you think you'd be more comfortable with the production of the set then?
Probably, yes.
That, because that removes that
profiteering.
The profiteering idea behind it is that they've made something for the fans, and they're not receiving anything for it themselves, but they're doing something that would have probably been Owen's wish. That would have been a...
It
would have given it a different feel, shall we say.
Yes, it would have been a nice compromise, almost.
Yeah, I mean, personally, it's something that I have wanted to see for years, and I think this is the kind of benefit of these DVD and Blu-ray sets still over the network, in that if I turn on the network, I can't just get it to show me a bunch of Owen Hart matches.
Yeah.
I have to go individually and go and find them and skip through the shows or whatever. Whereas sets like this allow you to just sit down, as we have and I have for the majority of today, and just watch 8 hours of Owen Hart stuff, and it's been really enjoyable, whereas that's not something you can do with a network. So it's nice to see something like this produced, and I think time and attention has gone into it, but there is a kind of a bittersweet taste to it.
Yeah.
And you're going to fall either side of the line where you're completely okay with this and you would really like to see the documentary, or you are going to be, no, I don't think this should have been made. So like you say, I can understand Tom's perspective on that, but I can also understand the perspective of people who, you know, like I'd go out of my way to buy this.
Yeah.
It, you know, kind of even knowing where the money was going kind of thing.
Well, but, to someone that's got such, you know, nostalgic positive qualities as Owen does for so many people, then yeah, it's understandable that you want to go out and get it. Because, like you say, it's nothing that you've been able to have in that format before.
And one of the things that, I don't know if this has really any input necessarily into the discussion that we have, but I think for me it was actually an important thing for me. When I watched this, I was a little bit, not worried, but I was always conscious about, how will it make me feel? By the time I get to the end of this DVD, how will I feel? And you know what? For like 99% of it, I actually felt really good. Smile on my face.
Yeah.
Quite happy. I think it's a really kind of uplifting DVD. I think it's a really nice memory of Owen. And I think that's a really positive thing.
We start with an In Memory Of screen before the Now, Then, Forever opening. Emotional piano music plays over still photos of Owen as Talking Heads tell us their memories of him. Featured in the introduction are Jim Neidhart, identified as Owen's brother-in-law, Ron Simmons, Road Dogg, Triple H, Jerry Lawler, Vader, Rick Steiner, Billy Gunn, Scott Hall, Terry Taylor, Lex Luger, Mark Henry, Bret Hart, Mike Yoda, Mick Foley, The Brooklyn Brawler, Edge and Ted DiBiase.
Quite a few.
Quite a range.
The general consensus is that everybody loved Owen, that he was great to be around, and that he was a noted practical joker. Road Dogg describes him as a ray of sunshine in every scenario. What's interesting in the opening video package is that there is very little in-ring footage of Owen, rather a lot of home movie-type footage filmed backstage on tour buses, in restaurants, etc.
Yeah.
And that was really nice. Kind of similar feel to the Click DVD in that sense, that, you know, there's lots of nice little bits that people weren't seeing before. I thought the same was true here. Just nice to get that different perspective and kind of that little bit more insight about what the reality of wrestling is like behind the scenes, when, not when the cameras are off, because obviously there's cameras on, but, you know, in that different scenario.
What did you make to the opening video package?
Interesting. I thought there's a huge amount of people in there. I've noted down lacking a considerable amount of the key players.
Such as?
Maybe. Like Stone Cold, Vince, people like that I thought would have had a lot to do with him, or were big in, you know, in his time in the company.
Shawn Michaels, I thought, was one that might appear on, given that his, you know, the prominence in storylines in terms of the kick that, you know, ends his career and so on. I thought he might appear in it. Stone Cold, possibly. But, you know, it's one of those things that I've got to say, there was a really good variety of talking heads and people that have real good input to make.
There's Rick Steiner.
Who we also enjoyed appearing in the Click documentary as well.
Indeed. Where's Scott?
Not on the list of people they want to talk to.
He's on a different list.
Absolutely. Yeah, I thought this was quite a nice opening video package, and interesting to see a documentary about a wrestler, certainly in the opening sort of 5 minutes, focus very little on their wrestling or their wrestling ability. I mean, there is lots of discussion in the documentary about Owen as a wrestler, but this video package sort of seemed to want to set the tone about Owen as a person rather than Owen as a professional wrestler.
Yeah. And I think it's an interesting thing, isn't it, to almost say there's almost like a little moral to it. There's more to life than wrestling, and kind of, you know, in Owen's story, there's that thing where he's not doing this necessarily just for the wrestling. He's doing this to make enough money so he can go and be a family man and go and do what he wants to with that. And it almost feels like that was mirrored to a sense, perhaps.
Yeah, and there's kind of that little extra with Edge talking about how he feels Owen made him realise that there is more to life than wrestling, and you don't have to take it so seriously. Mm. And, you know, you look at something like the Nugget nickname, which many other people would have been so offended by, and people were offended for him, whereas he was more like, nah, I'll run with that, I'll get a T-shirt with that on.
Yeah.
We'll have a laugh about it, which was nice to see, in all honesty. Mm. Throughout the documentary, an interview with Owen from 1996 is played. This is introduced after the title screen with Owen telling us about his father being a wrestler and promoter and his lousy brothers being wrestlers and his sisters all marrying wrestlers, with the last baby, him, taking the family to the top. I thought this interview is a really nice find.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And although it's sort of played slightly in character, it's still quite revealing in a way.
It is, yeah.
While staying in his 1996 snotty heel persona, Owen, I thought, still comes across as likeable in these short segments.
Yeah.
Yes.
Brett tells us that Owen was the baby of the family. His sisters, Allison and Georgia, note that everyone adored Owen. And Keith tells us that he was everyone's favourite heart. Diana comments also, looking good.
That is my note, exactly.
I thought that would be your
Diana
note.
Diana Smith, looking pretty good.
She was at WrestleCon, wasn't she?
She was at WrestleCon.
Wearing a really cool tassel-y jacket, if I remember.
That's her jacket from SummerSlam 92.
Oh, it was the same,
yeah,
same one?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So, okay. That's kept in good condition. It's worn well. Like Adam's shoes. He's had the same shoes for 16 years, or is it longer now? 18 years, is it?
No, it's
not that long.
Are they made of concrete?
It's 15 and a half.
Only 15 and a half.
How do you have a pair of shoes for 15 and a half years?
Very well made.
Like, literally, I will buy a pair of shoes for work, and within
6 months,
like, probably, you know, maybe a little bit longer than that, but maybe 8 months, the sole will have literally worn through to my foot. Well,
have you seen the soles on these shoes?
Yeah, I know, but, like, still, if I multiply that up, how many, you know, do you just not walk very far?
Well, I'm a lot lighter than you are.
Ooh, that's thank personal. You for
that. I'm just saying, that might be a contributing factor.
What brand of shoes are they?
They're Clarks.
Lots of my shoes are Clarks.
You want to go back and have words? Ask for the pair Adam had 16 years ago.
Ross Hart says that Owen had great balance and technique, with early stampede footage being shown of Owen backflipping off the top turnbuckle. The practical joking is placed at the feet of Dean and Bruce, who makes very few appearances, but is featured here. I get the sense also that was an older interview with Bruce.
Yeah.
I think possibly for the Heart and Soul documentary, I can't quite remember how he's pictured in that, but a lot of the other interviews with the other brothers and sisters look new, whereas Bruce's two short appearances looked a bit older.
It was nice to see him, though.
It was. He didn't clothesline anyone, though. But it was very nice to see the stampede footage.
Yes.
There was some really good stuff, and it's like, although obviously the wrestling that we've seen Owen do has been really good for you know, consistently, like you say, Adam, for a long time in the show. I hadn't necessarily seen quite that style of wrestling that he did.
Yeah.
The pace, the kind of more out-and-out high-flyer style. Very interesting to see that.
Jim Neidhart reappears, and we get a shot of him in Stampede looking like a completely different human being.
Mm.
A lot thinner, no goatee beard, a bit of hair.
Because the goatee beard really is...
defines his face.
Yeah, if you wanted to do a little cartoon of Jim Neidhart, you just do a round face and that beard on it.
Yeah, you could draw that beard on a stick figure.
Exactly, and it's Jim Neidhart.
Yeah.
Maybe you should. Before we put the show out, Adam should draw that and everybody should have to guess who it is.
Who is the stick man?
Well, he's got a very unique body shape. You may have heard.
Yeah.
The Anvil introduces a story of Owen staging matches between a cuddly monkey and the family cat, Heathcliff.
So this is where Telly Hart got his idea from.
That's exactly what I've got written
down. Exactly what I got written down.
In doing additional research for this, I did also find something that describes the cat as cross-eyed. So that makes it even better.
A cross-eyed cat resting on a stuffed monkey.
Yes.
Classic.
Most of the Hart family talking heads contribute here, with Brett saying that the cat and the monkey actually had some pretty good matches.
I wonder if you could, you know, the better than some matches that we've seen.
Undertaker versus Giant Gonzalez, nice. Or cat versus monkey. Maybe we should do like play-by-play on that. It's a shame there's no home videos of that one. We break for the first of several segments interspersed into the documentary called Owen Tales.
What did you make of the kind of cutting in to kind of almost, did you think it disrupted or elevated the narrative?
You're just reading off my notes, because my next note is, what are your thoughts on breaking up the feature in this way? Would these have been better removed entirely and left on as extras, or should they have been included without the title cards?
Extras. I don't particularly like it. There's some good stories that come out of it, but it just feels like there's too much of a value and play on the kind of almost Dennis the Menace type character that they're trying to portray in this. I don't really like the feature itself.
I think it's quite tricky because I think they're doing that to really emphasise this is what Owen's like, and they don't necessarily, a lot of the stories, fit logically into the sequence of the story that they're trying to tell.
Yeah.
I mean, they could perhaps just do it chronologically, but I don't know if that would work. I still think it'd be quite disruptive because there's a lot of the stories. But that said, I don't know if extras is the right way to go with it. I think it was a tricky choice. But things like the title cards and the cutting between it does make it feel slightly...
feels a bit forced.
Yeah, I think, as with a lot of modern WWE documentaries, so back in the day, 2005 we're talking, they were a lot more open to running longer documentaries. So the Brett one runs quite long. The Rise and Fall of ECW is nearly 3 hours. Whereas... more recently, they seem to be aiming around the hour, hour and a half mark.
Yeah.
And this only runs, I think, about 65, 70 minutes tops. Mm. And watching some of the extras that feel a lot like these little Owen tales, yeah. I think if you'd have included the lot and, like I think you just said, Paul, put them in sort of chronologically, they would have given the documentary a slower pace, which I think I probably would have actually liked, because I think... it moves very, very quickly.
Yeah, yeah. When you talk about how many years are covered for like how many minutes of the show, it's frantic's unkind to it, because I don't think it's frantic, but it's busy.
Yes. And I think the kind of people that are going to want to go out and buy and watch an Owen Hart documentary or a Click documentary or a Sting documentary or whatever they produce, I think are the kind of people that aren't going to go, well, it's 2 hours, I'm not watching it.
Mm. I think the, like you say, it's almost like your target audience. I'd almost use the word savour. With somebody like Owen, you want to savour him, you want to savour the quality of his work.
Yeah.
And this feels like more like my approach to eating, which is I enjoy my... because people always say, why don't you slow down, you'll enjoy it most. Like, no, I can enjoy my food eating very quickly.
So, such as before we started recording, we each had a donut, Terry's chocolate orange donut, and I started eating mine, I think... I'd wager a good 3 or 4 minutes before you started eating yours. Yet yours was finished before mine.
Why it took you 3 or 4 minutes to eat a donut, I've no idea. Adam, have you got anything to say about my eating?
You eat quick.
Thank you. But anyway, savour it.
Yeah, I think it's difficult because from my perspective, like, if you told me there was an 8-hour Owen Hart documentary, I'd sit down and watch that. But that's just me, and as you may have gathered, you know, from the previous 50 episodes, I'm very detail-oriented, so I really like in-depth, sort of blow-by-blow history-type things, and I will really get into the minutiae of a person or a topic.
Maybe it's just a case of them, they're making documentaries for, whether rightly or wrongly, they perceive it to be like the YouTube generation.
Mm. Yeah.
And almost like these Owen Tale things are almost like flicking between a different video, because, you know, no one's got an attention span anymore. and it flips between different parts. And no one can last for anything longer than about an hour and a half.
Like you say, the stories are good. So this first one here is Brett and Keith telling the story of Owen pranking Stu on the phone pretending to be Reg Parks, which should be a pretty familiar story, I think.
Mm. I've definitely heard that one.
Have you heard that one before, or is this new to you?
Not heard that one, but I've heard quite a lot of him, you know, phoning people up, being in hotels, that kind of. I know it's a fairly typical Owen rib.
The main feature moves on to Owen's wrestling ability. Diana and Bruce both talk up Owen's agility, with Brett saying that the first time he saw Owen wrestle was when he was about 12. The Harts had a ring set up next to their house, which Owen would use to backflip off the top rope. A bit like your idea to put a Hell in a Cell over your house.
Yeah, it is. I was going to say, they include footage of him kind of doing what I'd call like almost like a fake out 619.
Yes.
Which I thought was really cool because...
That's 1986.
Yeah. Just amazing.
This grace is demonstrated through clips from Stampede Wrestling, which is always great to see in a WWE-produced documentary. Yeah. Although they own footage from a wide range of companies, they are sometimes reluctant to actually use it.
And the quality of this footage is really good.
Really good.
This isn't, you know, like small-time, grainy, poor quality, poor
audio.
You know, this looks and sounds good.
Again, this is the sort of stuff that, you know, if you... told me on the network they'd uploaded like a year's worth of Stampede Wrestling, I would sit down and watch that. Like, I think the other night it came out that they'd uploaded a bunch of NWA stuff, and we sort of put a bit of that on, didn't we, and saw lots of mullets
all over the place.
But yeah, the quality of this footage is absolutely great, and I think it's important to place Owen in the context of the time he's doing that stuff. Think about that for a second. 1986, and you, like you're saying, sort of fake out 619s. The spot that I absolutely adored that you see in a match on the extras, and we see on this in a minute, is the Owen bounces off the ropes. The opponent doubles over for a back body drop or something to that effect. Owen leaps up onto their back and backflips off of them. Like, that is awesome. Still in 2015, that is awesome.
Yeah.
Just so innovative.
Brett references Stu bringing Japanese and masked Mexican wrestlers to Stampede, suggesting that Owen would study them for his own development. Owen being a decent amateur wrestler is also quickly referenced, with Owen saying that he wrestled his first match whilst 18 and at university, tagging with the Dynamite Kid and wrestling under a mask as the British Bulldog.
Is that true? Because if it is, that is the best debut ever, isn't it?
Well, therefore, Owen tells us that he was the original British Bulldog.
Yeah.
He then says he headed over to England and wrestled his next match in the Royal Albert Hall as Bronco Owen Hart.
That is also pretty cool.
So, again, there is actually a fair whack of footage out there of Owen Hart on stuff like World of Sport.
Mm.
That if you want to go check that out, that's on YouTube.
Wow.
So, I mean, like, for people who don't know, the Royal Albert Hall in Britain is a pretty big deal.
Yes.
Huge venue.
Ross Hart recounts Owen joining Stampede Wrestling due to Brett the Anvil and the Bulldogs joining the WWF, suggesting that there was a void for a Hart family member in the promotion. So that was very much a sort of territorial tactic back in the day. In terms of, obviously, people could always just leave and go to different territories and stuff. What you would find is that promoters would book family members because, you know, you're pretty safe booking your family in a top spot. They're probably not going to bugger off somewhere else.
Yeah.
More footage of Owen in Stampede is shown, and yeah, quite honestly, I'd happily sit and watch hours and hours of this footage. Edge tells us that he was a fan of Owen Hart after discovering that Brett from the WWF had a younger brother. Chris Jericho appears, detailing the first time he saw Owen Hart and the moves that Owen could do, including backflipping off an opponent doubled over, which, yeah, looks really awesome. Mm. The match from this clip is included on the set and is against someone called Mackin Singh. We watched this match earlier, and did you spot who that was?
Adam got it straight away.
A Bastion Booger.
It was indeed.
And you know what? It was a really good match, and he wasn't that bad.
Yeah, another sort of account of someone going to the WWF and being bad, but actually being quite good elsewhere.
He's a bit slimmer.
Yes.
I think in this. I mean, he's not a slim man.
He's younger also.
In this, yeah, he really piled it on when he went to, or prior to him going to the WWF.
Probably eating all those chickens on the way to the ring.
Do you think he wears through his shoes very quickly?
Probably really fast, yeah.
Jericho says that he was a fan of Randy Savage, The Rockers, Coco Beware, and other smaller wrestlers, but even they didn't do the things that Owen Hart could.
Did the footage of Jericho look slightly weird to anyone else?
I didn't spot that.
It's really high definition, yeah, but it looks like high definition home movie.
Right.
Rather than everyone else appears to be in like studio shots. There's just something very strange about the look of the Jericho footage, and it's only the Jericho footage.
Maybe they green screened him.
I just thought...
No, it doesn't look green screen. It looks like they've just taken a big fucking light into his kitchen and shone it in his face.
Well, I just thought he looked a little bit...
Like Gordon Ramsay?
Odd. Yeah, he does look a little bit like a smaller Gordon Ramsay. I bet he's not as good at football, though.
Was it Bon Jovi that CM Punk called him?
A picture is shown that Jericho says he drew as a kid in class, showing him as Owen's tag team partner.
I quite like that, that he's kept it. Or he hasn't, he's just redone it for the purpose of this.
Drew that in his kitchen. More Stampede footage follows, with Tyson Kidd noting that Owen had a hybrid style and could wrestle, brawl and fly, which at the time was not what a lot of mainstream wrestlers did in the US. Brett says he knew Owen would be good, but had no idea how good he would actually turn out to be.
Well, one thing that surprised me in that, the footage of that match with Bastian Booger, or the man that would become Bastian Booger.
Mackin Singh.
Yeah, he picks him up and slams him.
Yes.
And that's a big, heavy guy. And that's not something that you'd normally see Owen do in his WWF career. He's not slamming massive guys, is he?
No. Neidhart says that Owen was the best wrestler of all the Harts, with Smith Hart saying that Owen was his favourite. Ross quickly sums up Owen travelling the world, honing his craft. Brett says he had heard a lot about Owen, but rarely had the chance to see a lot of him wrestle, as he was always on the road for the WWF. The Hitman claims that he originally had the idea of performing as a masked wrestler if the Hart Foundation gimmick hadn't worked out for him. I can't quite picture Brett as the Blue Blazer. Brett says that he pitched the idea to Vince of having a masked wrestler on the roster and the merchandising potential it could contain. I've always wondered about Vince's aversion to masks, yet love of making money.
Yeah, because you can just flog the masks, can't you?
Yeah.
How many Rey Mysterio masks must they have sold over the years?
Yeah, exactly. And especially with him gone, it baffles me why they haven't, you know, taken somebody like a Kalisto and sort of really ran with them as idol of the kids, if just to sell the masks.
I think we've mentioned this before, is that granted they want to create their own product, but if they'd have bought in El Generico, it would have been over massively, and they could have sold all his masks to everyone.
Mm.
You bought that mask when we went to that live event, Adam, didn't
you? Oh, yeah, I forgot about that.
Off some nefarious individuals, I believe. I don't think they were officially licensed WWE salesmen.
So tell that story.
Well, I needed a mask for something.
that makes it sound way worse than it actually was. It was a university thing. You were filming something, you needed a wrestling mask.
Yeah. And so I said, oh, it's 10 quid, right? I need a mask. I said, what size are these? And they said, I said, these adult sizes. And they said, yes.
Without flinching, they said, yes.
Yeah. And so me being a very trusting person says, yeah, all right then. And I had it, and it just would not fit. It was so small. Paul managed to fit it on his abnormally small head.
I honestly do. When I play cricket and bat, I have to wear a child size helmet. That is true. That's true.
Surprising that you've got such a massive brain and such a small head.
It's weird. But former Leicestershire and England cricketer Vince Wells also used to have to wear quite a small helmet.
Well, just like him then.
Yeah. Good to know. But yeah, that was money wasted.
£10 wasted. I bought another one for less than £10 off the internet in the end, and that was the right size.
The Brooklyn Brawler appears to contribute his standard line he trots out in every single fucking WWE documentary. I had one of X's first matches in the WWE. It's like fucking Bono every time a famous musician dies. If it wasn't for X, there'd be no U2.
But he has wrestled everyone, right?
Yeah, he is actually telling the truth, mind you. It doesn't change the sentiment of the statement. Every single one of these, he appears and goes, I had this person's first match, or one of this person's first matches.
I did put this, at least he knows his angles. he knows that a full rotation is 360 degrees. Lots of wrestlers don't, apparently. we all know the hazards of 270 degrees being a full turn to a wrestler.
More awesome footage airs of Blue Blazer matches, mostly narrated by Lord Alfred Hayes.
Yeah, it really brought back to me how much I dislike Lord Alfred Hayes' commentary.
Was today the first time you'd ever heard Lord Alfred Hayes?
Lord Alfred who?
Lord Alfred Hayes.
Who?
Lord Alfred Hayes.
Lord Alfred Hayes.
Yes.
See, it was funny when you did it, the other episode, the Who thing. I guess it only works if Who's in the ring.
Yeah, if Who's the answer to the question, it's a lot funnier. Is this the first time you've heard Lord Alfred Hayes?
Yes, it is.
A black-eyed Rob Van Dam appears, saying he was all over Owen as the Blue Blazer.
Yeah, nice black eye.
They could have picked a better day to do his interview. Yeah.
They could have just used some makeup, or he could have worn a mask, or
photoshopped it out.
An eye patch.
Yes. Jacques.
Yes. Possibly. No, Pierre's.
Oh, Pierre's, sorry.
Brawler takes us through a spot where Owen would leap to the top rope, springboard off of it, flip backwards, and then hit a hip toss. We haven't watched any 1980s WWF for this show, but I'm sure it's not hard for you to imagine that this was very different to anyone else in the company at the time.
Well, yeah, because if I remember right from my 80s sort of viewing of WWF, it was massive steroided tanks punching each other in the face.
The WWF in one sentence.
Watch our product.
But the thing is, everyone did. Yeah. It was really popular.
And then this guy got nowhere.
Well, somebody pointed out that basically, you know, this is the era of the Hulk Hogan just doing a
leg drop.
A leg drop, pretty much. So
we also get a short Blue Blazer promo where he tells us he's quick as a laser and sharp as a razor.
Doesn't want to get shot with a taser.
Needs an inhaler.
I'm not sure that's more of an than or.
Yeah, but it still sort of rhymes.
It scans, yeah. Okay.
Daniel Bryan tells us that he's a huge wrestling fan, really, and saw a lot of footage from Owen all over the world, saying he was amazing wherever he went and that his usage in the WWF as the Blue Blazer was disappointing.
I thought that was a really kind of nice thing to put in a way, to have somebody of Bryan's stature just to be kind of, albeit from a long time ago, openly critical about the company.
Hmm.
I thought that was really interesting.
Brett says that Vince liked the idea, but they never really got behind it. Edge says that they didn't understand what they had with Owen. Brett says he talked to Owen about staying and advised him to leave before he became a jobber.
Hmm.
Another very interesting statement.
Yeah.
He also says that Owen floated the idea of quitting at the time, but ended up wrestling back in Mexico and Japan. Vader says he knew Owen well from Japan, where he adapted to the style well. And Scott Hall says he got to know Owen in Europe, so you get a sense of him being a very well-travelled performer.
Yeah.
Which, these people are oddly the ones that end up being quite good. These people that actually go all over the world
and
learn a different
style
in kind of every continent or country that they go to.
I think it's one of those big things that adaptability, not necessarily being able to wrestle those styles yourself, but being able to work with those people who do the different styles, I think makes yourself much more marketable.
Yeah, and I can't remember off the top of my head who it was, but there's a story where it might be someone like Regal or Finlay talking about the shows in Germany where you would actually wrestle 30 nights in a row in the same town, so you couldn't go out there every night and have the same match because it would be the same people going to watch you every night. So you had to learn a variety of stuff, and you couldn't rely on like a couple of spots to get yourself through. I thought that was really interesting.
Yeah.
And I imagine Owen would have been on one of these kind of tours that went through Germany and probably ended up in one of those situations.
Yeah.
Mm.
Our second Owen tale features intercut Bret Hart and Triple H interviews, with Owen prank calling people in their hotel rooms and pretending to be room service, hassling people over complimentary breakfasts or pizzas. This was pretty funny.
Yeah.
I've got to say, I did like Triple H in this.
You like Triple H in all documentaries.
I do quite like Triple H a lot. Not as much as the Sean Waltman. Sean Waltman. I was going to say the 1-2-3 kid. I then realised his name was Sean Waltman. But no, I liked his voices that he put on.
Yeah, where he's doing would you like your eggs poached or scrambled?
To be fair, Triple H did it a lot better than that.
Oh, thanks.
No, I thought he seemed quite good in this.
And the Brett one about, we want to give you a free pizza. Well, I don't want a free pizza. Well, we want to give you a free pizza. Okay, all right, we'll have a free pizza. Well, the pizza's free, but the toppings are this. Just that sort of irritating phone call. Very, very, very funny, I thought this one was. Tyson Kidd talks about having an Owen match on tape from WCW and being surprised to find out that he had wrestled there. I don't think this is something that is generally remembered that well, as with the likes of Rob Van Dam and Edge, it's for a very brief period of time. It only really lasts from mid-March 91 until early April 91. So,
oh, right.
I hadn't got a clue.
You can understand people...
like a fortnight or something.
Yeah, either having not seen this or not remembering it. Jim Ross takes a quick shot at WCW, saying that like many others who came through there, they didn't know what to do with him or how to use him. Fernando Fernandez, another good podcast name, says, bit of a pipe dream, but I think there was a time in 1989 or 1990 where Owen appeared in WCW for a cup of coffee. You didn't imagine it. Curious to know your thoughts on how he would have done there if he had decided to stay in WCW instead of heading back to the WWF.
Well, you've got to imagine the people that he'd been mixing with, okay, 6-7 years later.
Yeah.
But, oh my God, there'd have been some good matches, wouldn't they?
Yes, yes, there would. I mean, even at the time, you'd have people kind of in there like the Steiners. You'd have Sting, you'd have Brian Pillman, you'd have Lex Luger, you'd have Barry Windham. And okay, he's probably a bit lower down the card, but, you know, had they let him have a crack at like a 20-minute opening pay-per-view match with early 90s Brian Pillman, well, you probably would have had something really rather good there. But yeah, like you say, I think it's a question we've actually got later on as well. But yeah, when you hypothetically put Owen against the likes of Benoit, Malenko, Guerrero, Mysterio in 1996, it's, it, you know, you're almost talking dream match territory, aren't you? Yeah. Brett says that in 1991, the WWF brought Owen back, this time as part of the New Foundation, with Jim Neidhart, along with some pretty interesting gear.
It was lovely. It reminded me a bit of Bob Sparkplug Holly.
Well, it's got sort of checkered flag yeah, pattern on it.
I wasn't a massive fan.
Well, you're the clothing expert. Talk to us about it.
It's a bit flashy, but in the wrong way.
Anvil says he loved tagging with Owen, as he had two or three moves, but Owen had hundreds.
That's quite a nice comment.
Brett says that this was a happy time for Owen, and Natalia appears for the first time, saying that she was pleased seeing Owen tagging with her father. The New Foundation transitions into High Energy, where Owen was partnered with Coco Beware, although sadly the MC Hammer Gear didn't leave along with the Anvil. Hall of Famer Coco appears, saying that he and Owen clicked well together, with Brett taking a jab at the Anvil for getting released.
Yeah, I made a note about that somewhere. It talked about
dropping the ball.
Dropping the ball. So what was it? Was it kind of drugs or...?
Probably not kind of drugs, probably just drugs.
Oh, so, I don't know Jim's story.
Drugs.
Drugs. Okay.
Jericho says that High Energy didn't really fit the two performers that well. I have quite fond memories of High Energy. They were a tag team when I first started watching.
So. Did they have much success?
No, none at all, really.
Oh.
If somebody's just gone for drugs reasons, is it really fair to call the subsequent tag team High Energy?
Well, I guess Owen wasn't on any drugs.
It just seems a bit of a jab, doesn't it?
Omitted here is Owen's post-High Energy singles run, which can be seen in a few clips dotted about the documentary. They're the ones where he's wearing the blue singlet top and the blue trousers.
Yeah.
There's one match included on the set that sort of represents this era, but yeah, there was a period, you're talking early through mid-93, before the turn on Brett, where he's wrestling as a singles babyface, so he didn't directly go from sort of babyface High Energy Owen into the Brett feud, which is kind of how it's presented on this documentary. There was a singles run prior to the turn. Not much of note happened, in all honesty, but it did exist and kind of isn't mentioned him really being a singles guy before the Brett feud. Brett says that Owen began to lose hope with his position in the company and was intending to quit and become a fireman. But Sister Allison suggests that wrestling was what Owen was meant to do. Brett references one of our very early episodes, SummerSlam 1993, saying it was around this time that he asked Vince when he was going to do something with Owen. Brett discusses the WWF pitching him an idea to wrestle his brother. Which one might that be, I hear you ask?
I think it's probably Bruce.
Well, they wanted him to wrestle Bruce, but Brett claims that he said that if they were going to do that with anyone, it should be Owen. Why?
Because he already worked for the company and it was good.
Well, Bruce was the shit.
Well, that too.
Oh, and apparently he'd also had knee surgery.
Why did they want Bruce?
Yeah, it's a funny one.
Like, well, what's the appeal? Well, I mean, obviously we know the appeal of Bruce, right?
Better than anyone.
It's got the best clotheslines
all round. But what do they see in Bruce above someone like Owen, who's a proven great ring technician?
Yeah, and
this just seems a bit weird.
This was kind of my thought watching it. It's like, right, so you've got two brothers in the company on the payroll operating, yet you want to do a brother versus brother feud, let's hire his brother that doesn't work for us and is a dickhead.
I mean, do you think there was perhaps a feeling that Owen couldn't work as a heel? Because he'd presumably been babyface predominantly up till then?
Well, Jericho suggests that the storyline wasn't too far-fetched, younger brother in the shadow, etc., but suggests that, in a very interesting comment, I can hear the backstage criticisms now. Oh, he has no personality. But Jericho insists that, well, he could have personality given the chance.
Yeah.
And that's a very telling comment about, I think, modern WWE as well.
Yeah. Give someone a chance to see what they can do.
Yeah, and it's kind of funny to think, like, you would have somebody on your payroll operating as a wrestler, performer, entertainer, whatever you want to call it, and your belief is that they have no charisma. Well, then why did you hire them?
Yeah.
It's a funny one, isn't it?
yeah, if you saw nothing there in the first place and didn't think they had any charisma, then how are they ever going to make it in your company?
Yeah, then what was the point in ever having them work for you?
Yeah.
But yeah, this is definitely still an issue that resonates today.
Well, it's also a bit weird because although, I guess, as you grow in stature in the company, you would feel more at ease to be yourself, particularly on the road.
Yeah.
And, you know, it would have been lower down the card earlier on. From the sounds of how everybody, like literally everybody talks about Owen, it sounds like everybody knew that Owen had bags full of character. Whether he had shown that on the screen, everybody knew that he was a real personality.
But obviously not allowed to show that in his sort of younger brother babyface type persona. Jerry Lawler says that Owen was one of the most underrated talents ever in the WWE. The Family Feud matchup from Survivor Series 1993 is shown, with Sami Zayn making a quick comment about how well it was played out. We also get a classic Bobby Heenan line about the Hart family putting Owen out back when the family dog ran away. Will you stop? The Royal Rumble turn is shown in highlight form, sadly, without the kicking your leg out of your leg promo.
Yeah, it's a shame, that.
A classic little Owen moment is shown that I really liked, of him rolling Brett back in the ring in a match pitting the Hitman against Tom Pritchard, with Owen sort of saying to the camera, "All right, Brett, I'll help you back in the ring." And then when he sort of rolls him back in, he turns to the camera and says, "He always needs my help." Brilliant.
I like to, I don't know if it's quite where this fits into the DVD, it's around about this point, but there's a little clip of Owen doing a radio interview.
Yeah.
And the woman that's there in the studio looks the most disinterested person ever.
Yes.
I don't know if you noticed that.
Yeah, I picked up on that.
If you want to see anybody look disinterested, just go out, just buy this Blu-ray for that.
Or you could just watch Elle Hebner at the start of the European title match. I've never seen someone so unhappy to hold a title belt. Natalia says that Brett and Owen tried to work everyone that they weren't getting along. The 96 Owen interview and an Owen radio interview underscores this, with Owen playing bratty little brother, ending with Owen calling himself the bestest there is, the bestest there was, and the bestest there ever will be. Brett says it's funny now to think how serious they took it, with Natalia saying that they enjoyed every second of pretending to hate each other. If that's the case, then that is really nice in a way, that they got to sort of stage this, and like between the two of them, they were just having such fun doing it.
Yeah.
Well, I think it shows in the quality of the ring work as well. I mean, I think when you enjoy it, you're likely to perform better. I always think that's the case.
Yeah, and we sort of touched upon that in the Click documentary with the quality of the matches they had with each other. Not to say that they, you know, Sean didn't have great matches with people outside of the Click, but there was probably a greater level of enjoyment and a greater level of understanding based upon their out-of-ring friendship.
Yeah.
We move on to WrestleMania 10.
This was amazing. I thought some of the camera shots that they showed of this were stunning.
Tyson Kidd suggests that the Brett Owen bout is one of the best opening matches of all time.
Yeah,
the best.
It's hard to argue otherwise. Brett says that they did their best to make Owen come across as the best cheating little bastard around. Beth Phoenix says it was the match that made her want to become a wrestler, as she wanted to make other people feel the way she felt in that match. She's turned up in quite a few of these modern WWE documentaries, despite not having been on the roster for a good few years, and I think always comes across really well.
Yeah.
Random tangent, I kind of feel bad for her as well, that she was maybe just a few years too early to be a part of the whole sort of Sasha, Becky, Charlotte, Bayley, NXT type crew that she'd actually fit in quite well there.
Yeah, she would have worked really well with that as a different type of character.
Yeah. And
what happened with her? Why did she leave? Was the...
She's married to Edge. They've had a kid together.
So she's
off doing
family.
That. Yeah,
well, that would give her.
Yeah, it's a nice happy ending. Yeah. But I think, you know, had she come around now, then she could be having some sort of very top quality matches with a lot of the women that we've seen good matches from over the past year, rather than sort of wrestling opposite the likes of Maria and Kelly and other such in-ring generals.
Classic.
The Mania matches afforded extended highlights, with JR saying that it was beautiful art and a how-to guide on how to do this. Owen's post-match snotty interview is included. Chris Jericho praises the storytelling of Owen beating Brett, but Brett regaining the title in the same show. It really was brilliant.
Yes.
Yes.
I think I probably gushed over this more than anyone at the time when we covered WrestleMania 10. But yeah, when you kind of incorporate that story into the show-long arc of younger brother stepping out of the shadow of Big Brother, getting his big victory, but then Big Brother gets the title back at the end. Like, how good is that in terms of wrestling storytelling?
Is it the best story that we've seen in our entire time?
Yes.
In this?
There's a good shot that it is.
You know, it still stands up. It's still really good. It's far-reaching. And it's got, you know, it's got lots of drama that goes over many shows.
And it's the nice thing about it is it's simple and
relatable,
and it's not offensive. So, you know, you can look at some of the other stuff like The Pillman's Got a Gun, and, you know, we talked about the pros and cons of that, although it was very tension grabbing and stuff. It had its downsides too.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I think it really stands out for showing that you don't need to be edgy to do something amazing.
And I think as at the end of a show, the bit where everyone's in the ring congratulating Brett and then Owen walks out and there's nothing said and it's not over-egged, but the whole sort of feeling behind it is such a high point to end the show on.
Yeah.
It's, you contrast that with, let's say, Luger's weird celebration when he's lost everything. That's a terrible way to end a show, right? But
well, they restaged that last week with Roman Reigns, didn't they?
What?
Trying to bring back that classic one.
What happened?
Well, obviously they had the WWE title tournament going into Survivor Series. Rollins vacated due to knee injury, yeah. and the obvious result was Roman Reigns winning, and Roman Reigns did win, and he got confetti coming down from the ceiling and celebrating. And then Sheamus came out and cashed in on him. So it was a bit like SummerSlam 1993.
Big celebration, but you lost.
Less of a bus.
Mm.
Owen's King of the Ring victory over Razor Ramon is detailed, with Scott Hall saying he was glad to be wrestling Owen, as he was never bothered about winning or losing, but was more concerned with having a good match. The Anvil's reintroduction as Owen's sidekick is shown, along with Owen redubbing himself the King of Hearts.
I really like this King of Hearts montage that they put together. I think it was really cool.
Phoenix suggests that this was what Owen needed to become his own man, and Tyson suggests that Owen let parts of his own personality shine through in this gimmick, allowing everyone to see how funny he was. The SummerSlam cage match is covered, with Brett saying that they didn't want to have a bloodbath, but wanted to have a really good wrestling match. They did.
Yeah.
Natalia says the feud with Brett helped Owen turn a corner in his career. Owen Tales 3 sees Billy Gunn, Triple H, Harry Smith and Lex Luger tell a story of Owen sandbagging Lex on power moves, but letting Bulldog do them.
This is hands down my favourite tale, because it just involves mocking Lex Luger and everyone finds it really funny.
The thing is, also, this fits in properly here with the documentary feel, with the timeline.
Yeah.
The stuff. This didn't feel so forced. This was a good example of this is the time to put one in. You don't need to prefix it with an Owen's tail section. It just fits into the story perfectly.
Also, we got interview footage from Davey Boy Smith with his 1999 WWF return cut into this. So it's kind of weird, obviously a very archive interview, but it was telling this story and it did fit in with what else was being told. But yeah, so the premise of the story is that Owen is in the ring with Lex and telling him to do power moves and gorilla presses. And then when he tries to do them, he underhooks his arm under Lex's arm so he can't lift him. So it looks like he's trying to lift him up but can't. Then Luger tags Bulldog in and Owen lets Bulldog do them, which is genius. Edge says that Owen was able to adapt to whatever situation he was placed in, offering that Owen teaming with Yokozuna and being managed by Mr. Fuji made no sense, but Owen made it good. Did you like that team?
I like that team.
I think we said at the time it really works in the sense, and I think there's the do we even say it on the documentary, it's accentuating you know the best of both in a way, because when you've got somebody so, not to say it in a mean way, but slow and slightly cumbersome.
Well, yeah, JR says that Owen hid Yokozuna's weaknesses and accentuated his strengths.
Yeah, but it also works for Owen, doesn't it? Because placed next to somebody who's so slow, his fast style seems even faster in comparison. So it does help him shine that bit more.
I really quite like it because you've got the very serious nature of Yokozuna. That's, you know, what he is. And then almost it makes Owen funnier because his antics around the very serious Yokozuna are quite hilarious. Plus, at the point that we saw, Yoko can't do an awful lot.
Yeah.
He's so obese. He can't really do very much. So Owen can go out and have like quite a lot of good stuff. Like a good run in a match, do loads of showy stuff, and then Yokozuna can sort of tag in and just leg drop someone and win the match for him. It kind of works in that capacity.
I think it's also referenced here very quickly as well that from a storyline perspective, it does actually make sense that if Owen was picking a partner, he would pick the man that went and beat his brother for the world title at WrestleMania. So it's a bit tenuous, but
it works,
kind of makes sense. Brett says that Owen saw this as an opportunity to work with a top guy. Owen's team with Davey Boy Smith is fondly remembered by Edge, with Natalya saying that they were not just great wrestlers, but great entertainers. Owen standing on the announce table at King of the Ring 1996 shouting, "We love you, Davey. Yeah. We love you, Diana," is shown, which was a great moment. And his performance on that entire pay-per-view as guest commentator was a real highlight of quite a good show, really. Edge says that Owen was the Bart Simpson of the WWE. Tyson Kidd references the entrance spot that Davey and Owen seem to do quite a lot, where Davey comes out posing and Owen ducks under him and takes the spotlight, which is always funny.
Yeah.
Owen Tales 4 brings us the Hogpen match.
Which I love this. I am a mark for this match.
It's a bit of an NGP favourite, really, the Hogpen match.
Maybe that's what, like, one of these matches that isn't as fondly remembered by a lot of people that we all loved. That would be a fair one. I think that was a question that came up.
I think we liked it. I think you loved it.
I didn't like it. I did love it, as Simon Cowell would say. But it was this Hogpen story, again, it fitted the timeline. You know, okay, Owen wasn't involved in the match, but it still made sense that this flowed nicely.
Yeah, well, my note, which you've just explained explicitly, is I'm sure this made Paul very happy.
It did. It did make me happy. Plus, the story is brilliant.
Yeah, I don't think I'd ever actually heard this story, but at the same time, it rings a very vague bell, but it seems like if I had heard it, I would remember it. Mm. It details Owen having the pigs for the Hogpen match delivered into Vince's office.
So basically, yeah, he seemed to take delivery of the truck with the animals in when it arrived backstage.
Yeah, and say, basically, follow me, I'll show you where they've got to go, kind of thing.
Yeah.
Vince allegedly knew it was Owen right away, with Mr. McMahon making his sole appearance on the documentary backing that up.
Old footage? Or is this a new one?
I think it looked relatively new.
Oh, I like the way that Triple H is quite regular in his appearances in this.
Yeah.
He's got a lot to say about a lot of stuff. I don't have anything to say about this match.
Probably doesn't remember it that well.
Hmm.
A 2011 interview with Paul Bearer has him say that he couldn't see any talent trying this with Vince today.
It was true. Weird to see Paul Bearer looking like this because this...
Quite thin.
What was it, 2011?
Yes, this was, yeah.
So when did he pass away? Was
2013,
it?
Yeah.
So it wasn't long before he passed.
Plus, it'd be odd to see it today because I don't think they've had any Hogpen matches lately.
Okay.
They should have another one.
Yeah.
It's time to bring it back.
Well, the next pay-per-view is December 2015, so for the 20th anniversary of the Hogpen match. In fact, fuck TLC.
Yeah.
They should just have the December pay-per-view be Hogpen matches.
WWE Hogpen. I'd watch that.
Someone produces a match graphic of the main event, which of the next pay-per-view, in case you're considering watching it and or buying it, is Sheamus versus Roman Reigns.
Oh, God.
So I'd watch it if it was a Hogpen match.
Me too.
Yeah, they could have a few saying, "Oh, you're a real pig to me." And that would be enough to make it a Hogpen match in my eyes.
Pig, we're having a Hogpen match.
Going into 1997, with some spoilers for us, I was kind of a bit worried about this part of the documentary, as it kind of does ruin a few things.
It's all right, Adam won't remember any of it.
Yeah, you will, though.
Some of it.
Michael Cole tells us that Owen winning the Intercontinental title was not surprising, and Natalya mentions the Slammies. Sami Zayn that says for a lot of people, if you mention Slammies, Owen is the first name you think of. Kevin Owens appears saying that Owen made the Slammies mean a lot, and Triple H says that Owen was never told to carry the award around, it was Owen that chose to make it a big part of his gimmick.
That's cool. I like details like that, not just say Owen doing stuff like that, but whenever kind of anybody gets something, an opportunity, and they really make the most out of it, I think that's just good craft.
The reformation of the Hart Foundation is shown with Brett interrupting a match between Owen and Davey Boy. This is one of my favourite Raw moments of all time, with Owen and Brett making up and Owen in tears. This faction is fucking awesome, and I'm so looking forward to discussing it all again. Mm. But what did you kind of make to that brief footage of them making up?
I didn't know it happened.
Right.
I wasn't aware, so this was a bit out of left field for me. It's very odd to not see it in its
context.
Yes, because you kind of see the footage and you think, why is this happening?
It is logical.
Okay.
That I will say.
Yeah, it's difficult. To be honest, I don't think it's shown enough of that for me to think that made sense in terms of like the actual wrestling storyline. All it did was move on the storyline of what's happening for Owen in his career for me here.
The heel face divide between the US and Canada is briefly discussed, but again, it's something that we'll cover a lot more going forward.
See, you just make it sound like the heel face divide between the whole nations, like as a whole.
Yeah, that's what I mean.
It is what you mean.
Yeah, entirely.
Because I've got it in the kind of within the context of the wrestling, but it's like, yeah, I know what you mean.
I know what I mean.
Well, I'm glad.
Do you know what he means?
I think so. Yeah.
Do you know what I am saying?
I believe I know what you're saying.
Do you know what I mean?
Sometimes.
Natalia says it was fun watching Owen try to be bad. Canadian Stampede is shown with Chris Jericho telling us that he was there and that it was the loudest crowd noise he ever heard as a fan. And we get brief camera footage of the camera actually shaking when their music hits,
which
is pretty cool.
They sometimes get that at the King Power Stadium, don't they?
Yes, they do.
Leicester are top at the minute, let's just say that.
Well, they might not be by the time we release this.
No, but at the minute, while we're recording it, Leicester are top of the Premier League.
They are.
They've got a top of the league clash with Manchester United next week.
Tomorrow.
Oh, lordy.
Or 3 days ago, if you listen to this on Wednesday.
Let's hope we win / won that.
/ Jamie Vardy scores to beat Ruud van Nistelrooy's record.
Yeah. Have you heard the talk about maybe naming some a flavour of crisps after him?
No.
I don't know what they'll call it or what flavour it'll be, but there was something in the Leicester Mercury.
Pickled Vardy.
Salt and Vardy. There you go.
Chat shit, get banged.
What flavour would that be?
Blue WKD and blood.
Yeah, probably have that. Yeah.
The Hart family flooding the ring is one of those great wrestling moments and is covered in detail with footage of a young Tyson Kidd and Natalia being highlighted. Kidd becomes emotional talking about how he wore an Owen t-shirt to the ring that he had got that day. Brett describes it as powerful for their family and for the fans, and Natalia wells up saying that what a great moment it was, as it was the last time that their family were all together. Brett says that their run as the Hart Foundation is something he has very fond memories of.
I mean, I thought that was just a really lovely feel-good moment, kind of warm, fuzzy feelings.
Did not make you slightly sad?
Yes, in a way, but everybody looked back in such a nice way, and Natalia's teeth were so white.
What?
I'm talking to you about so just her teeth are, you know, I don't know what shade of white it is, but it's so white it's blue.
We could perhaps pull them out and put them into the Franken Diva.
Natalia's teeth.
You know what? But teeth that white are a little bit off-putting to me. It's impressive, but don't, I find it a bit intimidating.
So white they're blue.
But do you know what I mean? It's like
sunlight.
It's like burning magnesium. you know where you should have like that little square of blue glass that you get at school.
This could be like one of your chat up lines for Mrs. Scrivens when you're in the mood. Your teeth are so bright they're like burning magnesium.
Well, that will just make all the difference.
Well, she's on Total Divas. She has to be completely surgically reconstructed.
Yeah.
It's a modern thing to do, isn't it? Like overly white to your teeth.
Mm.
Just think we should all get like teeth bleaching kits and we'll all do it.
So it's like a group activity one afternoon?
It's the sort of thing we should do. We'll do it for Christmas. Let's do it for the...
We'll have really white teeth for Christmas.
Yeah.
We'll kickstart it.
Then we can go on Total Divas. I'll get some more surgery.
And Adam can sew all the women together to form a
no. You know what? I think doing this podcast has kind of perhaps degraded me.
In what way?
Morally.
Completely omitted here is the Owen Hart versus Steve Austin match from SummerSlam 1997 and the pile driver that broke Austin's neck and changed his career. Should this have been included?
Yes.
It's a tricky one because we talked about it at the start. This is a whole DVD is putting Owen in a very good light.
Window on the world.
Yeah, I mean, it's very interesting. I didn't read a whole lot of Austin's book, and I don't even know if it's like an official one, but I've got like a copy of a Austin book.
Right.
And it talks about that, you know, Austin felt that Owen never really...
Apologised for
him, which when you hear everything else about Owen as a human being, as a wrestler, just as a top guy, it sounds so out of place with him, it's like he couldn't... kind of face what he's done, and that's not a criticism of Owen, it must be just very difficult for him. But it was odd that it was left out because it was significant, actually, and kind of, you know, the Rory's Owen gets a very brief mention.
Yeah.
And for me, one of the things that struck me a lot, because I did, after the Attitude Era, did their kind of tribute show, and I went and watched the kind of, not the whole of Rory's Owen, but I went and watched the last bit of Rory's Owen not that long ago on the network, and the pop that it gets, and the whole moment with Austin leaving the beers in the ring.
Yeah.
That is a very powerful moment for me. That's something that's kind of very burnt into my memory now.
Why hasn't it been included?
It wouldn't fit in with the feel-good tone of the documentary, I guess.
Yeah, that's what I've got
there. This guy's great good fun. He's the prankster backstage. Everyone loves him. He broke this guy's neck. It doesn't kind of fit in with where they're going with it.
It's one of those things, because I think everybody's got their flaws and everybody's human. And I think perhaps this just shows that he is a stand-up guy. And I think as a message to people, like, I think they do try and put a bit of a moral message in this. And it wouldn't have been a bad thing to say, look, you know, he was this amazing guy. And I don't think the fact that he broke Austin's neck takes away from that or detracts from that. It's just, he's like everyone. Everyone makes mistakes, you know. You move on from it.
Despite it obviously being an accident, it doesn't fit the narrative they're telling. Yet, if you have any knowledge of kind of Owen and his career, it is a big point in his career. So I don't know whether that's why his Intercontinental title run is completely glossed over, because you would have to incorporate the Austin stuff into that.
Because he loses it to Austin?
Yes.
Is it that match that he loses it in?
Yes, and then he wins it again as part of a tournament, if I remember correctly, and then loses it to Austin again.
Okay.
Mick Foley references the death of Brian Pillman in Montreal, with Brett offering interesting comments that if he had to go through what he did to have the times that he had with Owen and Davey, that he wouldn't change a thing.
That was interesting, and one of the things that I would say, I mean, I really enjoyed this overall, but I would have liked to have had a little bit more detail of this section here, particularly the effect that Montreal had on Owen, because I know that Brett isn't the focus of this, but obviously,
yeah,
the brothers, and he does play an important part in his career.
Luckily, I've got a bit more for you here.
Okay.
Natalia says that Brett's departure from the WWF divided the family, and Ross says that Owen was conflicted, having a secure, well-paid position within the WWF, but being upset with what was done to its family. Owen is complimented by various talking heads for staying with the company, with brief footage of Owen as the Black Heart being shown, an era of his career which is completely glossed over. Triple H says that Owen was one of the first guys we spoke to the day after Montreal and was adamant that he was staying. Brett says that Owen didn't really want to leave and would have only left out of loyalty to him anyway. Mick Foley says that we saw a lot of great Owen stuff after Montreal, referencing The Nation, but that a little bit of joy from Owen was gone. This is in stark contrast with what is written in Heath McCoy's Pain and Passion, The History of Stampede Wrestling, which I believe I recommended to someone on Facebook the other day and is a fantastic read. The quote is as follows. By most accounts, Owen wanted out of the WWF after his brother was betrayed. According to Owen's widow Martha, he went to McMahon and asked to be released from his contract, which paid him close to $30,000 a year. McMahon asked Davey Boy to break his contract. Davey claimed he paid a $100,000 fine to do so, and Neidhart, who was just working without one, was able to walk away with no restrictions. Owen could have gone to WCW just as easily, but McMahon would not allow it. McMahon had plans for him. Owen felt like a prisoner, Martha writes, caught between his love for his brother and his livelihood. End quote. In his book, Brett backs up the Owen as prisoner scenario, claiming that Vince refused to let Owen out of his contract, even when Owen told Vince that Brett had vowed never to talk to him again if he didn't leave the company. Vince wouldn't budge. Brett says that Eric Bischoff was interested in signing Owen, but not keen to pay him the same money he was earning in the WWF. Brett then recounts a phone call he made to Vince Russo where he asked how Owen could ever trust McMahon on his word again, only to instantly receive a phone call from Vince McMahon seconds later, who had been listening in on the conversation, with Vince threatening to sue Brett if he continued to, as McMahon put it, mess with Owen's head. They say history is written by the victors, so it's equal parts interesting and sad to see the losers change their tune to fit in with an approved version of the past.
Kind of rewriting history there. Yes.
Yeah, so Brett's tone has very much changed in the 10 years since his book was produced compared with what he's saying on this DVD now.
Since he's patched things up and is kind of on the payroll, legend status, etc., etc.
Yeah, so what do you kind of both make of that?
that is quite upsetting, because that is a very, very sad tale of someone that is trapped in a company that can't leave, that wants to, but if they leave, they've got no money and nowhere to go to. And yeah, it's quite horrible, really.
Do you think there might have been an element with Vince then, knowing Vince in the sense that we do, that Owen was kept under contract out of spite?
Yeah, Brett's gone somewhere else.
Davey Boy and the Anvil are kind of on the verge of useless, but Owen, who's still good to go and competent in ring, will keep him.
He's mine.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a bit dark, isn't it?
And obviously, you know, their version of the narrative completely contrasts with what we've just gone through.
Yeah, it's a hard one to go to, because it is quite dark, and it's a, you know, horrible position for Owen to have been in.
Much nicer for the documentary and the tone that it's trying to make, in that Owen was upset, but...
happy to come back to work.
But happy to stay.
Owen Tales 5 tells us the story of Owen making friends with fans on the road and staying at their houses when he travelled. JR questions the wisdom of staying with random fans, and Lawler suggests that Owen always gave the fans their money's worth. Thrifty Mick Foley appears, saying that Owen missed a set of shows, including Madison Square Garden, to go to one of these fans' weddings. Foley apparently did the maths and told Owen that while the fan may have saved him X amount over the years, going to the wedding actually cost him 5 times that amount, but said that Owen didn't care.
5X at Russell Maths.
You've turned a heartwarming tale into a plug for your Twitter account.
He's
well
saved
done.
1X, but it's cost him...
X times 5X.
5X.
Making a difference of 4X.
If this is a true story, this may be the best insight into Owen as a human being, I think, on the whole documentary.
Yeah. And his rationale for his life, almost. Yeah. In one equation.
No, nice guy. Basically, that's it, isn't it? Values people above money.
Yeah. Contrary to Mick Foley.
Mick Foley values money above razor blades, apparently, because his beard is... What happened to Mick Foley? He used to have like a goatee, right?
Yeah, pretty much.
And now it looks like...
a Wyatt.
Is he going to come back as a Wyatt?
Maybe.
It looks a bit like Moeen Alley.
He looks very little like Moeen Alley.
Well, his beard...
If you don't know who Moeen Alley is, Google it.
It's an England cricketer, left-handed batsman, off-spin bowler.
He's also of Indian origin.
It's his beard that I was making reference to, because he's got a very impressive beard.
Did you also notice his blue tooth is gone?
No.
Has he got an extra missing tooth?
Yeah, his blue tooth has been picked out of his mouth.
Mick Foley had a blue tooth in his mouth.
He had a blue tooth in his mouth.
Was he able to, like, send data to it?
Presumably not anymore.
Maybe he's keeping it somewhere much more practical for data transfer purposes.
Like in a mobile phone.
He really misunderstood the concept.
Natalia references Owen being in the WWF during changing times. Billy Gunn says naked, weirdly, a number of times.
That's my note. Billy Gunn can't say naked.
How do you say it?
Naked.
Naked.
Isn't that how Dusty Rhodes would say it?
Possibly.
Naked.
This is now unemployed Billy Gunn as well.
Oh, yeah, he's gone, isn't he? Was this the last thing that he did with them?
There's probably more stuff.
Was he unemployed?
They gave him the boot. He's been using ass implants or something to that effect.
What?
No, he got bust. He's been competing in, like, bodybuilding competitions, but... Mm-mm. Owen returning to the Blue Blazer character is covered, including him doing Hulk Hogan catchphrases. Brett says that Owen didn't like the way the business was going, but was happy with what he was doing. Again, at stark contrast with what is written about Owen's feelings on the Blue Blazer gimmick. Completely omitted here is Owen's run against Shawn Michaels at the end of 1997, which was quickly cut short and transferred into a feud with Hunter Hearst Helmsley instead. Owen's run as a member of The Nation, fake retirement, and tag team with Jeff Jarrett are also not included. Jarrett could have potentially been quite a valuable talking head on this one, but I'd wager he's slightly ahead of China and Scott Steiner in list of people we don't want to talk to.
Okay.
So it really glosses over Owen's career sort of post Montreal.
Yeah, this last bit he's just like wound up in a few minutes, really.
Owen Tales 6 is a story began by Owen himself, with Jericho recounting meeting Owen on a plane and Scott Hall telling us that he dubbed Owen the King of Carrion. Owen would travel light when on the road so that he could run through airports and not have to wait for any bags to get home to his family quicker.
It's nice.
May 23rd, 1999. Jim Ross telling the world that Owen Hart had died is shown, which is still upsetting to watch 16 years later.
And, you know, another kind of memory that's kind of etched into my mind from WrestleCon is the kind of story that he recounted about having to deliver that news.
Yes.
And him only finding out seconds before he was having to tell it.
Yeah, basically being told, you've got 10 seconds. How is he? He's dead.
Yeah. Shit.
And so kind of I watched that because I'd not seen that footage of him delivering the news that before.
Okay.
And so when I realised that that's what this clip was, I had all sorts of horrible feelings. Like I said, like for me, 98, 99% of this documentary was a joy to watch, made me very happy. But this kind of, wow, it's like hits you.
Tyson Kidd, Alison Ross and Keith Hart discuss hearing that Owen had died. Ellie Neidhart says something. Can't really understand what she's saying. Natalia says that her family was never the same after Owen died and that they never recovered. Brett says it was a horrible accident. Ed says that he and Jeff Jarrett were at the hospital and stayed there until the early hours, not understanding what had happened. Do you remember hearing about Owen's death?
The only thing that I really remember from the time is I think I remember you coming into Tutor in the morning and saying that a wrestler had died. And I didn't follow wrestling at the time and didn't know who Owen was. So it didn't really register with me. But now kind of I do have recollections of you walking into the Tutor room and saying...
I don't think that I was watching wrestling again when he died.
So, yeah, for me, this was about 4 or 5 months into watching it again. And this was at the stage where I would tape the pay-per-views off Sky Sports. And then, obviously, if Monday was a school day, I would quickly fast-forward through the shows before I came in just to see what had happened kind of thing and then watch them in full after school. And, yes, I have a very distinct memory of having this on video and fast-forwarding and seeing sort of them sat at the announce desk looking very somber, and it's a clip that lasts a few seconds, and realising something had happened and stopped rewinding and playing. And, yeah, very vivid memory of hearing that news and, yeah, kind of thinking, what?
Mm. Yeah, 'cause it's weird. Like,
yeah.
Right, really weird in this kind of... in the crazy world of pro wrestling.
Especially where, 1999 pro wrestling.
Where things are made up and crazy stuff's happening all the time, to have something so tragic genuinely happen.
Dave Gill on Facebook asks, do you think they should have stopped the broadcast after his accident? I felt very uncomfortable watching the rest of the card many years after the fact.
Yes.
Yes.
Yes, someone's just died. Yes, you should totally stop it.
I mean, they must have presumably known relatively quickly that it...
Yeah, it's within half an hour, I'd wager, of the accident happening, JR.
And there must have been a lengthy pause before they could do anything on anything with the show anyway, so they must have known, even if he hadn't died by that point, that it was a very serious thing.
If I remember correctly, there is even an angle on the show with Vince being taken to hospital after that, and they still air it.
Yeah, and think about the mindset of the other wrestlers who've got to go out and perform when one of their colleagues has just died. It's insensitive to the performers, it's insensitive to the viewers to carry on with something.
If I remember correctly, I think Jarrett and Deborah are either next out or the match after, and obviously they were tagging together at the time and quite close, and I think, if I remember correctly, it's been a very long time since I've seen it, but Deborah is quite visibly crying on her entrance to the ring. And you think, how can you get someone to do that?
I've never seen it.
No, I wouldn't advise anyone watching it.
And I think I will never see it.
No.
But it does slightly shock me that it went ahead with the rest of the show after such a thing had happened.
And I think at the time, you know, Vince sort of deflected any criticism of that decision as, oh, he'd want the show to go on. And that's just a very easy sort of out, I think.
Yeah.
Isn't it?
I mean, what's the... I don't know, I think it's just a horrible thing. And, I don't know, horrible for anybody to have to make any kind of decision. And I've got to say, not trying to defend it, but you imagine, like, try and put yourself in Vince's position, the amount of emotion going through you. And, okay, he probably should have... Well, he should have made a different decision. I'm not saying that he shouldn't have, but I do have sympathy about, like, horrible thing for him to have to go through, thinking, this has just happened and I have got, what do I do? It is a lot of responsibility. Yeah, and he should have made a different decision, but I do actually have a lot of sympathy for him, because that would have been a horrible time for him as well.
Raw is Owen is recapped, with Natalya saying it was more for the talent. It's clearly something that is still difficult for a number of people to talk about, with Mark Henry being, you know, quite visibly moved, having to talk about it sort of 16 years after the fact. Natalya discusses Owen having his last ever match with Christian, saying that Owen looked out for Edge and Christian when they first joined, and that when she and Tyson Kidd joined WWE, Edge and Christian looked out for them. Edge discusses how happy he was to wrestle Owen at Breakdown in 1998, which is a really good match as well. Chris Jericho gets his timeline all wrong, or the editing is poor, as he says that at this point he had left WCW to come to the WWF, and that's just not true. It's about a year later. Sami Zayn says that his generation has been heavily influenced by Chris Jericho, and with Jericho being so openly influenced by Owen, they are all indirectly carrying on his legacy. Kevin Owens discusses his son being called Owen as a tribute to Owen Hart, and that when he heard his first child would be a boy, he told his wife that they would be calling him Owen.
And that's a kind of just a real nice tribute, I think.
Yeah, I think Owen's contributions to this as a whole, whenever he's on it, in any of the extras as well, is really quite nice.
He seems like a stand-up guy. And it was nice when he talks, I don't know if it's on this or the extras part, where does it go into a little bit more detail? And
the
talks
extra
about,
goes into more detail, yeah.
He explains that the reason that he wanted it is because of he heard about the attributes of Owen Hart as a person and thought, I want my son to be like this.
Yeah.
And I thought, you know, to have that as a very genuine, very sincere reason for naming your child that is a beautiful thing.
So why didn't you call baby Scrivens Adam?
Well, that would have been nice.
I did actually suggest Adam as a name, legitimately.
The Mrs. Scrivens sandbag that one.
Yeah.
Vetoed that instantly.
Yeah.
Well, never mind, eh?
You're a bit upset?
A little bit now, yeah.
What's stuck up for you? I don't really get a say.
Oh, God, let's not go down that road again.
We close with a similar series of talking heads to the opening. Mark Henry says that every Owen Hart story everyone ever asked him was true. Road Dogg said he loves talking about Owen because it makes him smile. Allison says that losing Owen was like having a perfect smile but losing your front teeth. Kevin Owen says it always looked like Owen was enjoying himself. Natalya says that Owen loved living his life. Triple H says that wrestling didn't define Owen, and Edge says that Owen taught him not to take it so seriously. Natalya says she wishes she had gotten to know him better, and Brett says that he has so many fun and happy memories with Owen and still feels his presence all the time. The documentary ends with Owen waving to the camera.
Yeah, it felt a little bit abrupt, but in a nice way. One of the things, it did leave me wanting to know more about Owen, and I'd say one of the talking heads mentions it, and I'd say it's not just true of, I think it was Road Dogg, about making him smile.
Yeah.
If you look at all the people doing the talking heads, there's a few where they're recounting sad moments and they look, you know,
moved,
which is what you'd expect. But you look at, like, nearly all of the contributions made and the amount of people that are genuinely happy, genuinely smiling. It isn't forced. They are genuinely happy memories and people are reliving them and they are feeling better. And I think that's a wonderful thing. And there's a quote, I forget where I heard it from, you know, it's the people. Oh, no, I think it's included on the show.
It's included on this, it's Maya Angelou, isn't it?
It's talking about...
People will forget
what you said and what you did,
but they won't forget how you made them feel.
And it's perfect, isn't it? Sums it up.
So thoughts on the documentary overall, then?
Overall, I'd say it was pretty enjoyable. Actually, there's lots of quite nice stuff in there. It's quite funny. It's quite sad and sympathetic at the end. It omits quite a lot of stuff, and it feels rushed in places. But I would say that I wouldn't say that it was bad. I'd say that it was actually pretty good. I would probably recommend people to watch it.
I think to some extent it depends on what people want. And it's interesting that you've revealed the stuff about his wife, and that does put a bit of a different slant on it for me, knowing that now. I really enjoyed it. And as I say, I, having watched this, felt better. I felt happier. And right. I think anything that does that is a good thing, not just for me, but for anyone. I think if you get that effect, they've done something well.
Yeah.
I think if you're really a hardcore fan that wants the gritty detail and wants, you know, a complete history, you might be a little bit frustrated by the lack of the omission of some of the stuff like the Austin broken neck and some of the other stuff. But I thought actually the way that they dealt with it overall in terms of, this is Owen, he was a great guy, was a great wrestler, showed off his good skills. I found out a whole load about him that I didn't already know, which was great. They touch on, obviously, his death and the Roy's Owen, but without focusing on it, you know, because there is always that danger, because lots of people think like, oh, you know, they really glossed over that bit, but you don't want him to be defined by his death. You don't want him to be that guy who died from the accident.
Yeah.
And I think there is the danger if they focus more on that and went into that in detail, and if the, you know, that it would completely ruin the tone. And so actually I thought the balance of it was very good.
So thoughts then on the fact that, even though admittedly they didn't approve of it being made, Owen's wife and children aren't mentioned at all. So you kind of have the brief, he would run through airports to get to his family, but
no mention of the family.
No mention of the family. So, you know, not even from the Hart family talking heads. Is that the right way to approach it? Knowing that they don't approve of it, you just kind of focus more on different aspects of his life? Or would it be more insulting to mention them knowing that they openly didn't approve of it?
Like I said, I enjoyed the documentary, but it doesn't mean that I think that it should have been made without the approval of his closest family.
I think it's an awkward one, because if you've made that decision that it's going ahead, whatever decision you make on that, I think you're a bit damned if you do, damned if you don't, to some extent, and you've got to make the right decisions to start off with.
Yeah, I enjoyed it. For me, like I say, it was perhaps a bit too brief, but that's probably more me than the documentary itself. There was some really cool footage in yes. here. The Stampede stuff, the early Blue Blazer stuff, even the short shots of him in WCW. There's even footage from house show matches and the sort of little interspersed clips of, I think there's one right at the end, did we sort of both clock this earlier, Adam, where he says, you all love me, but I hate you.
Mm. Yeah.
Like, stuff like yeah. that is just really sort of personality defining, really quite cool.
There's the Mick Foley one where it's Owen Mick Foley trying to make Stone Cold laugh.
Yeah.
That's a house show one, isn't it, as well?
Yeah. So, is that the match? I think it's not mentioned on here, but I've heard about it before, where they use a bag of popcorn as like a hardcore weapon and Owen is selling it as if it's, you know, a cinder block to the head.
Yeah, it's they do talk about it on the extras, just not on the main.
Okay.
Yeah.
So as far as the extras go, there is 45 minutes worth of material cut from the main documentary included as extras on the set. All of them serve to back up the main feature's portrayal of Owen as both being extremely kind and a brilliant prankster. The most affecting of these, I think, is Tyson Kidd talking about the death of his friend Matt, something which we briefly touched upon when discussing Brett's return in October.
Yeah.
Tyson talks about Owen paying every cent of the cost of the funeral, as well as flying him and a friend, which I believe may have been Teddy Hart, although I don't think they quite made it clear, to International Incident to take his mind off things. Included as extras on the Blu-ray set are the tributes from Raw is Owen, which, if I'm honest, I don't particularly like them being on there. I watched a couple as they began as extras after something else, but there's around 40 on there. Why anyone would kind of want to put themselves through watching those, I'm not entirely sure.
A bit too upsetting.
Yeah, exactly. Like, you know, you've got footage of people 24 hours removed from somebody's death being forced to talk about that to a camera, many of whom would have been very close friends. It's like, it sounds, I don't know how it sounds. It sounds how it sounds, that even just seeing brief stuff of that was mildly upsetting for me. And we're 16 years removed from the death of somebody I didn't know. But even to just watch people live through that, albeit that long time ago, was still a little bit voyeuristic, I guess.
It's also quite out of step with the feature.
Yeah. I mean, they're only on as Blu-ray extras. So if you get the DVD, you won't get these. But like, I'd have rather you put another couple of matches on, or more of the kind of excluded bits from the documentary than the Raw is Owen tribute. So just, they're kind of my least favourite part of the package, if I'm honest.
I mean, do you think it would have been better if they'd have just chosen a select few, and if the volume of it was quite, you know, that many is quite intimidating, what do you think should have?
Yeah, but then if you choose a select few, on what basis do you pick which ones you show? Do you, you know, you pick, oh, these five people are the five most upset, we'll put these ones on.
Yeah, I guess.
I don't know what your criteria would be for choosing out of them. So, yeah, then why at the same time would you put about 40 of them on there? So yeah. I wasn't quite...
Yeah.
This was the part of it that made me the most uncomfortable, kind of those being on there. But the matches included are the real strength of this set, I think.
Yeah.
As being Owen Hart, there's a phenomenal range to choose from. We get a couple from Stampede, including the earlier mentioned bout with Bastion Booger and another with Hiroshi Hase under a mask as Viet Cong Express number one.
That's a great name.
That you can be that next episode if you like, Adam. Viet Cong Express number one.
It's just the number one part of it.
Well, he had a tag team partner who was number two.
But it makes more sense now.
They even talk on commentary about how there might be a number three. It's just a great sort of classic wrestling gimmick of masked heels. You can just wheel them out and be like, this is Russian Assassin number 28.
It's like Doom 1 and Doom 2.
Yeah. A couple of Blue Blazer bouts are included, one against Mr. Perfect before a squash match from his brief run in WCW. The New Foundation and High Energy are excluded, which is pretty sad. I kind of wanted to see a bit of Coco Beware. With Owen's babyface singles run represented via a pretty decent match with IC champion Shawn Michaels from August 1993. Two matches with Bret are included. The obvious choice of Bret versus Owen from WrestleMania 10, as well as a lumberjack match from August 1994 that was previously only released on a videotape titled Wham Bam Body Slam.
What a brilliant name for a DVD or a video.
That features Owen actually winning the WWF title via interference from Jim Neidhart before the decision gets reversed. But you actually get to see him celebrate with the belt and stuff, which I thought was pretty cool. Plus, the Lumberjacks are Neidhart, the 123 Kid, Jeff Jarrett, the Smoking Guns, the Head Shrinkers, the Heavenly Bodies, Well Done, and Quang. So, what more could you want?
That's brilliant. Any more Jimmy Del Rey?
We re-watched Bret versus Owen at WrestleMania 10 as we had our dinner prior to recording. Share any thoughts on that upon a rewatch?
Dead good.
I think it's better the second time round. You just notice more of the nuances again. But it's just phenomenal match.
And certainly on the Blu-ray, it looked like they'd done something to improve the quality of the footage.
Yeah. And it's not just... The recording of it would have been standard video, you know, back in the 90s. So, you know, it's not like they can rescan in film negatives to make it better. They must have just cleaned up the footage. But like various filters and things to take off different grains and things. I'm not entirely sure.
But I'm right, aren't I? It looked a lot cleaner and a lot sharper.
It looked better. But you can't just be justified by saying that, you know, it's on Blu-ray. Once before it's been on DVD. Obviously, you've got a higher resolution. But if you just take the same transfer, it's not going to be that much better. I mean, they've done something to it.
Did you notice, like on the main feature, when it showed you some of the WrestleMania 10 clips, the kind of the video footage from above?
Yeah.
I just thought it was ever so cool. I mean...
Yeah, I mean, there's lots of really nice stuff about that match, isn't there? And again, rewatching it, we probably touched upon it in our WrestleMania 10 episode, but that opening moment where the ring announcer, before any music plays, just says, coming to the ring from Calgary, Alberta, Canada, and there's a pause before Owen's music plays, I just think is... Like, you're a nuanced man as well, as you've said. Like, stuff like that is just... You know, when you really notice things, it's really, really cool. And it was nice to kind of revisit that. And obviously the match itself is 5 stars, basically. So, yeah, really, really good. A really interesting piece of footage comes from the WrestleMania 11 public workout in Times Square from March 28th, 1995. We watched this earlier as well. What did you make to this?
It's a bit weird. There's traffic going on all around them.
You should be, like, driving through and then it's like, oh, there's that chap. Owen Hart. No, the other one.
Nick Barberi.
Not.
Plus, we also got Todd Pettengill looking like an extra from The Matrix.
Not like an extra from The Matrix, like The Matrix.
With his mullet blowing in the wind.
Yeah.
Is that a film?
Have you ever seen The Matrix?
No.
You've never seen The Matrix?
What do you mean you've never seen The Matrix? Don't watch the sequels, they're terrible.
Well, the second one's bad. The third one's an abortion of a film.
Better or worse than The Road?
Well, I really like The Road, probably more than The Matrix, if I'm honest.
I'm not going to watch it then.
This is the sort of stuff, though, I wish that was on the network, and it's really nice to have all the Nitros on there, as well as a good amount of SmackDowns and Raws and stuff like that. But this is the random shit I want on the network. Like
the stuff that you probably have never seen before.
Yeah, exactly. Like, I've never seen this, and to see the sort of aerial footage of them wrestling in the middle of Times Square as millions of other people go about their daily lives is really quite cool. And there must be all sorts of stuff like this out there that they've just got in their video archives that, yeah, get it on the network.
I'd like a really good feature that took all of the video footage they got from their Times Square WWF New York bar thing that they had, and all of the different things that they had going on in that, because I imagine there was quite a lot going on there where they were trying to push it all the time. I think that'd be interesting to have a couple of hours of those sorts of things stitched together.
You want a WWE-based documentary on WWF New York?
Yes, I do.
To be fair, I'd probably watch that as well. I just want to know what was on the menu. There was that time Scrivens tried to dream up all those wrestling-related foodstuffs, wasn't there? Body slam burgers and chicken wings and stuff like that, yeah. The In Your House 6 bout with Shawn Michaels is included also, and definitely recommended viewing, along with the Canadian Stampede main event. Two extra matches on the Blu-ray are the Blue Blazer versus the Red Rooster, which has alliteration going for it, but is presumably there solely to justify Terry Taylor being a talking head.
And red versus blue, colour versus colour.
Oh, shit, I hadn't even noticed that.
Yeah.
Just need the Green Goblin to join in. They can have a triple threat. The Owen Hart 1-2-3 Kid bout from King of the Ring 1994 is on there also, which I'll stand by as being one of the best sub-5-minute matches you'll ever see.
Mm.
There's one match on this set that I've chosen for us to watch and review in our usual style, as I didn't think we'd have a chance to review it in the main timeline, but I kind of think it's too good for us to merely mention as having happened when discussing the build-up for another pay-per-view. Yep. The bout is Owen Hart versus the British Bulldog from the March 3rd, 1997 episode of Raw, taped in Berlin, Germany on the 26th of February. It's the final of a tournament to crown the first ever WWF European champion, with the Bulldog advancing over Mankind and Vader, and Owen beating Flash Funk and his brother Brett, via countout, to set up this contest.
Good tournament.
Yeah, there's some big names in there, kind of also included. You've got Hunter Hearst Helmsley, Rocky Maivia, Vader, Flash Funk, some big guys.
Yeah.
Earl Hebner looks so thrilled to be holding the European title.
He looks actively pissed off.
I didn't notice that. I thought he looked all right.
He looks pretty upset.
Rewatch his face.
Whose idea was it to come up with a European title? Where did this idea come from?
In Brett's book, he suggests it was created to appease Davey Boy Smith, in terms of he'd been promised, you know, big things and titles and stuff, but they haven't really delivered on that, so they kind of created another one to say, there you kind of go. I don't know if that's the true story, but that's what's suggested in Brett's book.
A story.
Yeah.
I always quite like the European title.
Yeah, it was always held by kind of random sort of sub-intercontinental title type guys.
Yeah, I quite liked it.
I thought it was quite useful, like the people like D'Lo Brown that would have it. It's kind of like, you think actually he was a good enough wrestler to deserve a title. Perhaps, you know, he went on to the Intercontinental, didn't he? Had both,
yeah.
Was that right?
He was Eurocontinental champion, yeah.
And wasn't he the first one before
Kurt Angle?
But
Kurt Angle said it didn't count.
Yeah, fair enough. But, you know, I like that stuff, and I think it has a purpose, actually, or for a time had a purpose and then probably got a bit abused.
Yeah, yeah. I kind of liked it when Shane McMahon and X-Pac were feuding over it. That was a pretty good feud, yeah. Our commentary team for this one is Vince McMahon, Jim Ross, and the Honky Tonk Man.
Why the Honky Tonk Man?
He's back, brother.
He's the Honky Tonk Man.
JR talks about how Bulldog and Owen haven't had any tag team matches on this tour of Germany, continuing the dissension storyline that we've seen building in our timeline so far. So although this is slightly jumping ahead of ourselves, it's not too far. It's about 2 months we're going ahead. Owen enters first, followed by the Bulldog, who is definitely playing face, slapping fans' hands on the way to the ring. I suppose he is in Europe. Britain's basically Europe at the minute. Maybe not soon. Vince says this will be a wrestling match like we have never seen before. We see the tournament brackets, and yes, there's some fairly big names in there. We open with Owen backing Davey into the corner, but Davey reverses and breaks clean. They exchange arm ringers, roll-throughs and kip-ups, with Bulldog bringing some technique like we don't usually see from him.
Now, this is the bit that I really liked in this match. This is Bulldog's... It just wants like a little weird spinny thing on the floor. So it's like a little mini spinneroonie partway through that arm ringer.
But with a point.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But he's like a turtle on his back spinning round.
But it's just brilliant though, isn't it? It's like, we use this word a lot, fluidity.
Yeah.
Just seamless, wasn't it?
Yeah, really good. And you'd kind of probably expect it from a Shawn or a Brett or an Owen, but maybe not a Davey Boy.
You really see the best of Davey Boy's athleticism in this match.
Owen looks to monkey flip Bulldog out of the corner, but Davey cartwheels out of it in a very unique spot.
Yeah, it's awesome, isn't it?
Owen manages a hip toss, but Davey Boy kicks him away. Owen kips up and they face off, slapping hands before the match continues.
There's a bit where Vince, I've just put Vince,
yeah, he does do his laugh, but Adam does it better.
That's too many has.
A test of strength follows, with Bulldog obviously getting the better, but Owen holds a neck bridge and gets back to his feet. He hits the awesome spot that we'll call the blue blazer hip toss that we saw him do in the main feature,
yeah,
where he sort of hops to the top rope, springboards, backflips, hip toss. Really cool.
I just called it that move off the ropes by Owen. I think it's just we should just call it that move.
The thing is, I don't think we'll see it again, so it doesn't matter what we choose.
Yeah.
Owen then looks for a Hurricane Rana, but the Bulldog hits a power bomb and slingshots Owen over the top rope to the outside before showing off his own agility with a flip.
He really, I say, he sails over, doesn't he?
And that power bomb is particularly good.
And the sound of this ring is particularly good as well. It almost sounds like a snare drum.
Well, it's particularly tight.
Yes, a very tight snare drum.
Yeah.
Ever the gentleman, Davey holds the ropes open for Owen to re-enter the ring. Vince says they understand each other's manoeuvres.
more than he does.
Or more than he understands the word notwithstanding.
Notwithstanding that manoeuvre.
Davey gets a hammerlock, but Owen flips over his head out of it and rolls Davey Boy up for a two count. Owen charges, but Bulldog gets an arm drag to bring Owen to the mat. Owen tries flipping out of another hammerlock, but Davey slams him to the mat from midair. Following commercial, Davey is working over Owen's arm. He gets a crucifix for a two before looking for his always impressive vertical suplex, but Owen wriggles out of it and looks for an enziguri, but Davey Boy ducks.
Not a nice kind of scouting of the moves.
They do know each other's moves very well.
Well, this is storytelling in wrestling, isn't it? These two know each other so well, why would they fall for each other's signature spots like this early in the bout?
Yeah.
It just makes sense. Davey Boy applies a surfboard and hoists Owen up before Owen grabs Earl Hebner's shirt to get out of it. Davey Boy monkey flips Owen and looks to clothesline him out of the ring, but Owen ducks and dumps the Bulldog to the outside. Owen then copies Davey Boy's flip and invites him back into the ring, holding the ropes open.
The section with the surfboard was brilliant. Like, you don't expect it from Davey. You'd expect Owen to try it, but Davey to do it. And the way that Owen gets out of it by grabbing the ref, it's just, again, that little heel persona.
Yeah.
Development, so good.
Oh, Hebner was agitated by that.
Understandably so.
Mm.
Owen allows Davey to enter the ring cleanly and they slap hands again. Bulldog with a side headlock takes Owen down to the canvas, gaining a two count. Back to their feet and Owen bounces Davey off the ropes, leapfrogging him when Davey returns. Owen sells that the landing has tweaked his knee, and when the Bulldog momentarily stops to show concern, Owen kicks Davey in the knee, causing heat from the crowd.
You could say he kicked his leg out of his leg.
You could say that.
It's a good crowd, actually, this.
There's
a good amount of interaction with it.
Owen looks to apply the sharpshooter, but the Bulldog kicks him away. Davey is pissed that Owen duped him, and a shoving match begins. Owen gets a spinning heel kick and jogs on the spot to show that his knee is fine. Owen hits a backbreaker and targets his brother-in-law's lower spine with knees and an Irish whip into the corner. Owen hits a leg drop across Davey's neck for a two count. Owen applies a chin lock as the crowd rallies for the Bulldog. Getting back to his feet, Owen knees Davey in the gut as the honky-tonk man does a pretty good Stu Hart impression on commentary. Bulldog gets a sunset flip to Owen from the apron for a two, but Owen fights back with a clothesline and a leg drop for a two count before going back to the chin lock as we go to commercial again. Back from break, Owen gets his overhead belly to belly for a two before applying a camel clutch.
And that's impressive, you know, for Owen to do it on a guy the size of Bulldog so easily and so cleanly.
Interestingly enough, on commentary, Vince talks about how the WWF are not giving you a bunch of talk, we're giving you action. It's interesting. This is an interesting concept.
It's almost like it's pointed somewhere.
Davey Boy powers out of the submission, getting Owen on his shoulders and dropping him to the mat. Davey charges Owen in the corner, but Owen gets his feet up and covers Davey with his feet on the ropes for a two. Owen hits a neck breaker and heads to the second rope for an elbow drop and another two count. Owen goes back to the chin lock before Davey gets to his feet. Owen sets the Bulldog up on the top rope and looks for a superplex, but Davey moves his body in midair to cover his tag team partner for a two.
That was good. It didn't quite perhaps come off how they'd like it to look aesthetically, but just the ambition to do something different there is a nice thing about how these guys work together, I think.
And again, someone that size shifting their body weight in midair like that is never going to be easy. Davey Boy hits a trio of big clotheslines and gets a vertical suplex for a two. Davey whips Owen into the corner, and when Owen bounces back, he gets a gorilla press and drops Owen bollock first over the top rope.
He does well to take that move like that, because it is an awkward angle that he went in at, I thought.
On his way back into the ring, Owen floats over Davey Boy and hits a textbook German suplex for a two. German suplex in Germany.
Hey.
Why don't the crowd pop more for that?
Yes.
Owen looks to whip Davey into the corner, but when Davey reverses, he charges and Owen looks to float over, but the Bulldog catches Owen on his shoulders for the running power slam. Owen holds on to the top turnbuckle, though, and Davey Boy falls backwards with Owen landing on top for a two count.
Was that like a deliberate electric chair drop, or do you think it's a bit more improvised?
I think that was deliberate.
Yeah.
Owen then looks to leap off the second rope for a crossbody with a cover, but Davey reverses for a two count of his own. Quickly back to their feet, Davey grabs Owen's leg, but Owen hits the enziguri. Owen locks in the sharpshooter, but Davey Boy crawls to the ropes, eliciting a big pop from the crowd. Mm. Davey tries to flip Owen in a tilt-a-whirl position, but it isn't quite there. Owen counters, looking for a tombstone, but Davey Boy reverses and hits the running power slam for a two. Owen kicks out. Davey Boy, did you notice, hooks the wrong leg.
No, I didn't.
So he hooks the near leg, allowing Owen to get his shoulder up.
Mm.
Again, just tiny, tiny, tiny details, but really good stuff. Bulldog complains to the ref, and Owen leaps to his shoulders with a victory roll for a two, but Davey sits backwards and gets the three to become the first ever WWF European champion. Post-match, Owen slightly reluctantly shakes hands with the Bulldog, and the announcers seem determined to telegraph a turn that never quite happens here. What did you reckon to this one?
Good stuff.
Stunning. I mean, do you know what the time of the match was?
I think it's 22:43.
Because it doesn't feel that long. It feels quite brief. I'd have probably said it was around about 13, 14, 15 minutes.
Okay.
Which I always think, like, if it's a 20-odd minute match, but it feels less.
It's great.
And I was gripped right the way through. So from the moment that, probably within about the first 40 or 50 seconds, Bulldog is doing that innovative escape from the arm ring by spinning, you know, the match is just mesmerising, is perhaps the way that I'd describe it.
Yeah, I'd agree. I think this is kind of a little bit of a hidden gem these days, in that it's not really hyped in the same way that something like, you know, it's a match I absolutely adore, but the 1-2-3 Kid Bret Hart on Raw, it is fairly well hyped as being a great match from the early days of Raw that you need to see. Whereas I think maybe this one is a little bit more glossed over and not misremembered, but unremembered, if that's even a word.
Is it because it's not in America?
Possibly. Again, there's a extra on the set where Tyson Kidd is talking about this match and being how much he loves this match and how much he's watched it. But I sort of said to Adam earlier when he watched it, was like, if you put this on as like a match on, say, Ring of Honor show in like 2004, it wouldn't feel entirely out of place.
Yeah.
Like, that's kind of...
It's ahead of the game, isn't it?
It's definitely ahead of the time. And you've got Owen busting out that blue blazer spot that we've not seen him do.
Yeah.
No.
And we've watched a good near 4 years of Owen Hart and, you know, a lot of his Raw matches, all of his pay-per-view matches. He's never even tried it.
Yeah.
Yet here they are, just doing it. He's clearly still got that in him to do it. So it almost makes you think that, not that he's not wrestling up to his own potential, but that he's capable of more.
Yeah.
And maybe it's just the context of what, you know, Vince wants or what the company wants that wouldn't allow him to go out and kind of do that stuff. But they kind of have this opportunity to wrestle each other and they both go sort of balls out in terms of busting out stuff that they wouldn't normally do.
Yeah.
So this is a really cool match that I would really advise people check out.
Totally, yes.
Okay then, to wrap up, we've just got a few quick questions from people on Facebook that are sort of Owen related. I thought we'd give people a chance to ask us anything they wanted to on that kind of topic. So here we go. Nick B. Owen Hart, as I think Brett stated in his book, was genuinely considered by his family to be the best among them at wrestling, as he was a jack of all trades in the ring and, unlike some family members, was highly charismatic on the mic and in the ring and was a convincing heel in the time WWF was in serious need of them. If Vince had gotten over his stigma about small champions, do you think we'd be remembering Owen as an all-time great world champ of the 90s, even if it would have been a brief run or two trading title wins with Brett? Also, just curious as to if you think Owen's influence is still felt today, especially in anyone playing the conniving, ungrateful to family slash fans heel he perfected so well.
Good question. In terms of, I don't know if anybody plays his character as well. Now that I've seen Kevin Owens talk about Owen Hart, I see elements of his character. Perhaps I didn't see a lot of the stuff with Sami Zayn, but I kind of see similarities there.
Yeah, I guess in the Sami Zayn Kevin Owens storyline, the arc they were kind of going before Sami got injured was that Owens was pissed that Zayn had made it there before him, which I guess has parallels with the Bret and Owen story.
Yeah. So I kind of do see an aspect with that. In terms of champion, and, you know, he was never going to be the guy in the company, but could he have held the title as, you know, transitional champ? Could he have won it and then lost it straight back to Bret at some point? Yeah, I think he could.
Yeah, I think we kind of went into this on another episode in terms of, in 2015, every Tom, Dick and Swagger has held the world title. Whereas in 1994, you didn't have it. And maybe the world title meant more at the time for the fact that Roddy Piper, Mr. Perfect, Razor Ramon, yeah, Owen Hart didn't hold it. That now, yeah, when you can say Jack Swagger is sort of a former world champion and he's jobbing on superstars, like, it really doesn't make your title sound all that much. So,
yeah
could there have been an angle where he won and lost it back to Bret? I think very realistically. But I don't think there'd ever be a situation where, regardless of Vince's stigma about small people, whether we'd be looking back on Owen as a all-time great sort of world champ.
No, you're probably right on that. It does feel like a bit of a shame that he never had the title as such. But yeah, I guess when you put him amongst those other names that you just did, there's a lot of big people or big names that never held the title. So is it really that important? He's still remembered as one of the greatest in-ring performers of the last 20, 30 years, isn't he? So,
and it's a funny thing in a business like wrestling where the outcomes are predetermined that it matters. So I guess you know, if I was a wrestler, you'd want to win a title. It would be a nice thing, but it's not necessarily the same as an athlete not having won a gold medal.
Yeah.
It's not quite the same parallel. You know, true. I can see it would have been nice. It'd been lovely for Owen to have won the title, but it's not the same. And all, like you say, although if he had have got to have won it for a month or two or a week or two or whatever, he'd have done a great job with it, I'm sure, for the time that he had it. But, you know, it wouldn't be something that's remembered long term, I don't think. I don't think it would be the defining bit of Owen's career. And if he did win it, you'd still think you'd remember your WrestleMania 10, your SummerSlam.
King of the Ring.
Yeah, that's what you'd perhaps remember him for still.
Peter S. Jensen. Owen Hart had an incredible year in 1994, winning the King of the Ring and putting on a five-star classic with Bret at SummerSlam. Do you think the WWF failed to capitalise on Owen in 1995 when he was relegated to the tag team division with Yokozuna? Do you think they could have done more with Owen in that year, such as putting him in the main event with Diesel or keeping Owen as a singles performer and putting the IC title on him?
See, I really liked the tag stuff with Yokozuna, to be honest. But equally, he could have done a really good job still as a singles competitor. I don't know, but I don't think he was wasted in the tag division. I quite liked his tag division stuff.
I think it's interesting because I think Owen would have benefited, perhaps, and he could have got more status from it. But for the company, it was probably the wise move because you're then getting more value out of another star as well.
Yeah, I would definitely agree with you there. I think you could have very realistically had him have a match with Diesel on pay-per-view in 1995, and you could have very realistically had him as IC champion in 1995, but I don't necessarily feel that his tag team with Yokozuna was a waste. Like you say, I think we all quite enjoyed aspects of that tag team, and it led us towards the sort of Camp Cornette stuff in 96 with Owen, Bulldog and Vader that we all really, really liked. Yeah. So, yeah, I would disagree that Owen going to the tag division was a relegation. Okay, you know, he had his run in the main events with Bret and stuff, but if you're not going to be world champion, you're not going to sustain that. You're not going to be consistently in main events if you're not the world champion anyway. But, you know, in 1995, okay, the tag division was not quite the peak that it was in 1988 or whatever, but it was still a pretty good spot for him to be in. There were certainly worse positions in the company he could have been in 1995. Could have been wrestling Mabel in King of the Ring pay-per-views.
Yeah.
Cameron M. Cotton. Originally, Owen Hart was going to be given The Game as his new nickname following his stint as the Blue Blazer. But unfortunately, his untimely death prevented us from seeing that come to fruition. As we all know, Triple H was soon given the moniker, and with it came a serious push up to the main event. My question to you guys is, do you guys think Owen would have gotten a serious push as The Game, and would he have been successful with it as Triple H was?
I think he'd have been good with it, but I'm not sure he'd have got to the same heights as Triple H. Not because of talent, or he wouldn't have been good with it, because it wasn't Triple H.
He was already married, so he couldn't marry the boss's daughter.
Sam Stoke, as a noob and novice to ring technique, can any of you tell me how Brett and Owen differed in the ring when doing matches, or was it just that Owen was the evil clone?
I think one of the things that you'd perhaps look at is, we talked about it very early on in the podcast in terms of, you talked about Brett's stock routine of moves, and I'd say that, you know, Brett was pretty good at mixing it up and doing variations on it and working different styles of matches. But I think overall you'd still say that Owen is a more versatile wrestler and perhaps more innovative.
I would argue as well that probably Owen had more character stuff in the ring.
Yeah.
Brett's character may have been that he was very straight-laced and very serious, but Owen's was almost the exact opposite. It was bratty, it was snotty. He wasn't afraid to make himself kind of look like an idiot or a fool. Yeah, you've got massive differences in Brett and Owen's in-ring technique. You know, I don't think Brett would even claim to be half the sort of flyer that Owen was. But yet at the same time, flying was not something that Owen needed to rely on.
Mm.
Ashley James Clements. Would Owen have fit in WCW, mainly working and having good matches with the likes of Rey Mysterio, Chris Benoit, Dean Malenko and Chris Jericho?
Yes.
Yes.
Yes. David Gray. Given their respective talents, was it a waste of Davey Boy and Owen to have them in a poor tag division in 96, or better for them as they perhaps gave the belts credibility? Also, three fantasy feuds for Owen. Mine would be Eddie, Jericho and Benoit. No, it was absolutely not a waste to have them in the tag division in 96. They fucking saved it.
Yeah.
They got those belts away from the Body Donners and the Godwins and the smoking bollock heads.
The smoking bollock heads would have been an awesome tag team.
Yes, they gave those poor, poor tag belts some credibility that they had perhaps been lacking for some time.
Well, they'd just been floundering around, like you say, just bouncing between these.
They were a prop for Sonny.
Yeah. So actually then they'd give it to some good wrestlers and a decent pairing, and suddenly it seemed a lot better.
The bad news for Owen and the Bulldog is that, yes, they're just around at a time where there isn't a lot of serious competition. I mean, I think we're all still anticipating the Furnace Lafon Owen Bulldog match, but other than that, there's not a real plethora of good tag teams over the horizon. I mean, it's always fun to speculate about teams being in different times, but if you move the Owen Bulldog team forward about 3 years and you stick them in there with the Hardys, the Dudleys, Edge and Christian, the Acolytes, teams like that, and you think, actually, yeah, that would have been really good.
Yeah.
And you could have seen some really great matches.
And actually, that's, if you look at a style of team that was missing from that kind of golden era of tag team wrestling,
it was a real technical marvels.
Yeah. That they could have had, it would have been interesting to see them work against the Dudleys, like you say, the Hardys.
The Acolytes, even the Outlaws, you know, a year later.
Too cool.
Too cool.
Too cool, yeah. Too cool could work.
Right to censor.
Right to censor. So three guys you'd love to have seen Owen face.
I think from what I've seen, I'm not the biggest expert on some of the WCW stuff, but I'd say Dean Malenko and Ray, I would say, is my two automatic picks. The final spot might be the hardest to fill, because I'd probably want somebody a bit more different and a different variety of match. Should have really read that question before I started to answer it.
As with all questions and you.
Not all questions, just most.
Adam, any thoughts?
Any wrestlers from any time, is this?
Yes.
I would agree totally with Malenko from the sort of similar time period that we're talking. Like, his stuff, I think, would match it really well. That'd be really good. Looking forward to a more modern sort of time, I would say Neville versus Owen would be an amazing match. And also, in a weird sort of way, Owens versus Owens.
I was just thinking that.
Just to see a man reach a peak of his happiness wrestling someone.
Yeah.
Or Sami Zayn. Maybe that's who I should have my third spot, Sami Zayn. That'd be an awesome match.
Yeah, yeah. I'll pick for my three then. I'll go with Daniel Bryan, because he is obviously kind of my favourite modern wrestler. And I think Brian, when he's done his heel stuff, has done a sort of Owen Hart type role very often. Certainly when you're playing the smaller heel as well, as he did against a lot of the guys he was facing who were baby faces, when you're small and want to be the heel and not gain sympathy, you have to be a real dickhead.
Yes.
And Brian has been good at being an absolute dickhead.
We've not in his run in WWE, sorry, we've not seen his super heel stuff, have we?
He did a bit of it
It was almost like he gave a teaser of it, but it never really
The fans wanted him as a face. And it kind of swung back round that way. But yeah, I'd like to see those two face off. Owen Hart versus Ric Flair is an obvious one. Kind of Flair as the baby face, I would probably pick in that one. And Owen, again, playing dickhead heel. And as a third one...
Papa Shango, go on.
There's Owen Hart Papa Shango matches. I don't need to fantasize over that one.
Have you got any of them?
I think there's one on one of the Tagged Classics, maybe.
Wow.
It definitely exists.
Didn't you talk about it? It was a pre-show to one of the very first shows that we watched.
Yeah, maybe it was. Yeah. Let's go with Owen Hart versus...
Virgil.
That probably also happened as well. Yeah, you put him in 1996 WCW and there's a plethora of great stuff for him to do. So maybe I'll go with your first pick and go with Rey Mysterio in terms of you've got someone who was doing some very innovative high-flying stuff in, you know, 1986 versus the guy who's doing the 96 version of it. So a bit like the Liger-Rey match we saw. I'd quite like to see mid-90s Rey versus mid-90s Owen or mid-80s Owen even as well. Luke Robert Bale. Do you think Owen and Backlund should have swapped roles in Survivor Series and ended up with Owen winning the belt? He could have had a short run losing it to Diesel as planned, but I imagine him being so overconfident as champion, thinking he could beat the world, and then loses the belt to Diesel in 7 seconds. It might have hurt his character in the short term, but him and Brett could have continued their series of matchups for number one contendership. I think that sounds really good.
Yeah. Good booking idea.
Yeah, it's a tough one because I really also like Bob Backlund. So it's tough to say take that world title reign off of him. But yeah, that's perfectly feasible that you could have made the Survivor Series 94 match the night Owen finally captures the title and then loses it to Diesel at MSG 3 nights later in the way Backlund did. But I think there was a nice aspect to the storyline of Survivor Series 94 in that Owen realised he couldn't beat Brett for that title, so he took it away from him without... beating him himself. So that was a really nice element of that story. And obviously you get that whole breakdown he has when he's apologising to Helen and convincing her to throw the towel in, which is just great, great stuff. And finally, Jason Robert. What great matches could Owen have had if his career went up to, say, let's say, 2007? I know the rumour is he was thinking of retiring around 2000 time, but if he lived, he may have U-turned. He could have had great matches with Kurt Angle, Eddie Guerrero, Chris Jericho, and post-2002 Shawn Michaels.
Kurt Angle.
Yeah,
I think that's one maybe we missed out on.
Owen, Kurt Angle would have been amazing.
It's feasible. In fact, I'm pretty sure they had dark matches against each other.
Really?
Because Angle was doing dark matches for months and months and months before he debuted at Survivor Series. So I feel fairly confident in saying that happened.
But we'll never get to see one.
Yeah, we probably won't get to see it. Owen Hart, Brock Lesnar.
Yeah, I was thinking Brock.
Anyone Brock Lesnar, but... Yeah, there's going to be a plethora of good guys for him to face. And, you know, maybe you'd have left WWE and done a bit of part-time sort of indie work and you'd have seen him against guys younger on the indie circuit, like, you know, your AJ Styles, your Christopher Daniels, your Bryan Danielsons in the course of that. Maybe he would have gone and done the whole firefighter thing and then just when there was a show in town, he might have contributed. And I'm sure he probably would have been quite happy sort of giving a little bit back in that way. Yeah, so thanks for your feedback. We incorporated some of it into the main show and kind of tried to address some of the questions towards the end there. You enjoyed looking at this Blu-ray DVD set?
Yeah, it was entertaining, enjoyable, informative, and it's been quite a nice discussion, especially as you've just added loads of background into it that was missing from the documentary.
Like I mentioned earlier, it made me feel good for the most part watching it. I thought the way that they dealt with... you know, some of the tricky stuff in terms of not dwelling on the death was the right way to go about the documentary. I felt it was informative. I thought the talking heads were really good. I think some of the bonus matches were really good. The stuff on Stampede was a really nice inclusion. So I think it's a really, really nice little package that I'm really glad to have seen.
Yeah, I liked the documentary. There were aspects of it that I wish, like I said earlier, were more in depth or went into more detail. But like I say, I think the real strength of this set is the matches included. You've got some stuff that isn't available on the network, which is, again, a good reason to go out and buy these sets, which I think they have to do in an era where the Raws and pay-per-views you can just get on the network. Yeah. So you need to give me matches from Stampede. You need to give me matches from WCW. You need to give me matches from Wrestling Challenge in the middle of Times Square that make me look at a set and go, ah, yes, I want to see that. And this set, I feel, did enough of that to make me go, yes, I would go out and see that. If you're an Owen Hart fan, you know, like I said very early on, you're going to fall on very strongly on either side. You're going to either feel like you spent years and you can't wait to see this and you're glad to see it, or you're going to be on the other side where you say, no, I don't agree with this set's production. But hopefully you've enjoyed our discussion about it. You can find us on Facebook at facebook.com/newgenerationprojectpodcast. We are also on Twitter
at Woo
New Gen Podcast.
We did it all by ourselves.
You can, as ever, rate, review and subscribe for all of our episodes as soon as they are available on iTunes. If iTunes isn't your thing, you can check out new episodes on SoundCloud at soundcloud.com/newgenpodcast, on Stitcher Radio or on piledriverwrestling.net. If you've just found us and want to catch up, our back catalogue is going up one by one by one on botchamania.com. Calling Spots issue 18 is now available over at callingspots.com. This issue features a cover article on NXT champion Finn Balor, an interview with TNA wrestler Robbie E, and a piece on the legacy of one Psycho Sid. This time I've written about Survivor Series 96, which, as we've well established, one of my favourite pay-per-views of all time, so hopefully it works well as a nice accompaniment piece to go with our review of it. That's all available at callingspots.com for just $1.99. Subscriptions are also available. If you have a little extra spare cash, head on over to newgenpodcast.bigcartel.com to grab a Scrivens 3.14 t-shirt. In addition to the t-shirt, you'll get access to our very special Total Divas episode, available exclusively with the tee. newgenpodcast.bigcartel.com if you want to pick one up. If you don't fancy a t-shirt but would like to listen to us discuss Total Divas, then head on over to selfie.com/newgenpodcast and pick up The Double Cross as an instant download for just $1.99. All purchases help supporting the podcast in terms of funding the hosting, and we really appreciate those who give a little something back. We watched a bit more Total Divas the other day, didn't we?
Yes, we did. It is shamelessly entertaining.
Especially the talking heads with Paige, where we became mildly convinced that every time they went back to her talking head, her top just got lower. We were pretty sure she was just going to be topless by the end of it.
Well, the talking headshots, and I think I must have mentioned this, the talking headshots in Total Divas are solely about breasts. They should just be called the boob shots, because everyone is dressed in a manner that just hoiks them up as high as they can go.
I didn't see it. What are you looking at me for?
Episode 52 will, for the very first time, give you, the audience, the chance to pick what we review.
Ooh.
Before we start 1997 in the new year, we're giving you the choice of our Christmas episode, our final one of the year. The options are Baywatch versus Thunder in Paradise 2 or the Hulk Hogan classic Santa with Muscles.
Using the word classic there very loosely.
Stay tuned to our Facebook page for how you can vote on which one of these we cover. Are you excited about that one?
Which one would you rather cover? If
I was honest, I quite want to see Santa with Muscles because I've never watched it.
If I'm quite honest, I quite don't want to see Santa with Muscles because I've never watched it.
I really enjoyed doing Baywatch and Thunder in Paradise last time, so vote for that, please, fans.
My name is Stuart Brooks. I shall say goodnight.
I'm out of watch. Goodbye.
I'm 100% at Yes Full Screens. Goodnight. What? Why is that funny?
Got a doll, baby, I love her so. Nothing else like her anywhere you go. A man, she's anything but calm. Regular pint size atom bomb. Atom bomb, baby, little atom bomb. I want her in my wigwam. She's just the way I want her to be. A million times hotter than TNT. Atom bomb, baby, loaded with
I wanted to be a million times hotter than TNT. Bum, liada, bum, liada, bum, liada, bum, liada.
Atom bomb, baby, boy, she can start one of those chain reactions in my heart. A big explosion, big and loud, mushrooms me right up on a cloud.
Little atom bomb, baby, little atom bomb, I want her in my wigwam. She's just the way I want her to be, a million times hotter than TNT.
Bum,
liada,
bum,
liada,
bum,
liada, bum.
Atom bomb, baby, sweet as a plum, carries more wild than uranium. When she kisses, there's no hitch, 0 hours she turns on the switch.
Atom bomb, baby, little atom bomb, I want her in my wigwam. She's just the way I want her to be, a million times hotter than TNT. Atom bomb, baby, little atom bomb, I want her in my wigwam. She's just the way I want her to be, a million times hotter.